It's Friday! Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia! Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 8th day of May, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It's also where you'll find access to the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Nice group already gathered for this Friday on the front porch there. If you pick out a screen name and a password, well, you will be immediately greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Anatole and House of Roberts and Lou and Otto, Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. More to wander by shortly, I suspect. And they'll be awfully happy to see you. Hi, I'm Bob. It is Friday on the front porch. Here in about 57 minutes or so, we will gather together in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and see what's on folks' mind this evening. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and so thanks go out to our PayPal 8th day of the month subscribers. Much gratitude indeed for everyone who is a partial sponsor of the program. In this particular case, that would be Sue for Earth, and Dwayne, and Brendan, and Nancy, and Marsha. Thank you, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program. We come to the end of the week with a fundraising goal of $564, and just shortly before the program, Lady B made it $254. So we knocked that out. We're done with the week, and that's fantastic. And, well, we're just knocking out the bills as best we can as we go, move along. Thank you, one and all, for keeping this effort at commercial-free independent broadcasting going for as long as you have. And there's a challenge to help things out on the table, a couple of them, as a matter of fact. I heard from Rico in DeBerg. Rico is putting the DOLT 45 COVID challenge on the table. And in reference to the new COVID-19 infections in the White House, the goddess of irony is hard at work. Yesterday, we found out that one of Clorox Claudius's valets had tested positive. And today, we found out that an assistant to Mike Pence has tested positive. And I don't know if that person who is an assistant to Mike Pence is the same person. But, oh, well, here's the bottom line. The new bride, new-ish bride, of possibly the third or fourth most odious human being in the entire United States of America, the bride of Stephen Miller, Pee Wee Herman Goering, as it were, has tested positive. So there's a $45 challenge on the table to note those announcements, courtesy of Rico Indeberg. It is the Dolt 45 COVID challenge. And also, Larry in Liberalville put a challenge of his own up. And in honor of Mother's Day, Larry in Liberalville is putting up a have a show on me for Mother's Day coming up this Sunday. And at, beyond that, there's also a $100 matching challenge. So so that means that there's $145 worth of challenges on the table. And that would pretty much, well, that would wipe out the week. So thank you very kindly to Rico in DeBerg, who, if his challenge is met, will then add another $45. Dolt 45, get it? 45, yeah. And then Larry in Liberalville will take us into next week. Thank you to both of you so very, very much. Larry sent a note along a couple of days ago. Subject line, Disneyland closed. My family was at Disneyland on New Year's Eve day in December of 1985 when they closed Disneyland just after we entered the place. It took an hour to get on a ride, and our tour package only allocated 4 hours for the visit. We were in L.A. for the Rose Bowl. The game went as well as the Disneyland visit. This was probably before Billable Rick's time. No, that would probably put Billable Rick in his mid-20s or so. Might be before he got there to Southern California, but yeah. I'm guessing, what, 1985? Was that the Buckeyes going to the Rose Bowl and didn't work out for you? I'm not sure. And I wanted to give you a quick update from Dave in the Blind. He told us about testing positive yesterday. Subject line, being sent to a hotel near the airport to quarantine by the health department. He says, hey, Horn Community Congregation, it's your buddy Dave, soon to be hunkering down, not in the blind. They found a place for me to quarantine, and I'll be monitored, and I'll be getting food and everything I need. Now for the fun stuff. I found a clip on YouTube of a guy playing Hey 19 on steel drums. It's called Steely Plan. And it's okay, but I thought in honor of Steely Dan and the origin of its name, we would include it in the album, the playlist he's putting together, as well as Guns N' Roses Come Together. Be well, stay safe. I'm keeping you in my thoughts. Love, Dave. Send me not in the blind. Be well, Dave. Be well. And he's right now, even as he, even as we get the program going, Dave says, about to bug out. I'll have a phone, so I'll call in like on Monday or Tuesday and update. And, let us know how everything is going. Stay safe. Get well quickly, Dave. Thanks very kindly to Renee in D.C. getting us started this evening. $40 remaining on Rico's challenge. Joey, with his journal entry for the afternoon. Bob, that's how they all begin. I think they let the wrong people out of jail. Many governors have released many low-level offenders or those being held without bond because the confinement allowed an easier spread of the COVID. Well, somehow the powers that be effectively released the wrong criminals as the Supreme Court overturned the convictions of the co-conspirators in Bridgegate, and a right-wing crank judge dismissed the charges against Michael Flynn. Well, that would be it. That would be a right-wing crank attorney general. But yes, the real hardcore criminals, as the co-conspirators who blocked a bridge from New Jersey to New York and impeded an ambulance from quickly crossing and getting a critical patient to a hospital, should have been charged with murder as that person in the ambulance died. Yeah, they should have stood trial and been convicted of at least manslaughter. But those people went free yesterday. And then there's General Flynn. And according to Federal Circuit Court judge, the good general committed an act of treason, and Flynn, of his own volition, pleaded guilty to this charge. And actually, Flynn, who was supposed to go to jail, never spent a day behind bars. Oh, and speaking of bars, yes, and then there's the pompous-ass, arrogant Bill Peppy the Frog Barr, claiming that many times people have pled guilty for crimes they didn't commit. Well, there's actually a mechanism for that in the criminal law. It's allowed to happen, but you kind of have to announce that that's what you're doing, and they didn't do that. I can't remember what kind of a plea that's called, Billable Rick May, or maybe Steve in New York. An Alfred plea, I think it is. That's where you say, nah, I'm not guilty, but I'm going to plead guilty because, well, going to trial, and I don't want to get hammered in the sentencing phase, so please be merciful. Go be gentle. Yeah, Barr, says Joey, people that cannot afford a lawyer and are tired of sitting in jail because they can't make bail often plead to a bogus crime. That also happens. Not people who have committed an act of treason. Hey, Barr, I know nobody ever pleading guilty to the charge of treason unless they actually committed the act of treason. So, yes, yesterday, effectively, the wrong people were let out of jail. Technically, it was not a charge of treason. It was a charge of lying to the FBI. But what he was lying about was conduct that was arguably treasonous, save for the lack of a hot war with Mother Russia. Let me just look. I'm kind of stunned. I had everything ready to go with the program this evening, and then I got a piece of awful, awful news. And what scares the bejesus out of me is that there will be more such news. A few weeks ago, as this thing got going in earnest, our buddy, chat room moderator, Skype wielder of the lightsaber, Sparky, reached out to a dear old friend of the program, Bob Lottie, up in the greater Boston area, and Bob came on Friday on the front porch because Bob had vast experience as a laboratory technician and researcher. And we talked about how to sanitize things and how to kill viruses. To his credit, Bob did not suggest that anyone ingest bleach or any other or inject a disinfectant or stick any ultraviolet anything up or in anywhere. Bob's a scientist. Bob's gone. Our friend Tim from LA posted it on Facebook earlier. He had gone over to, hadn't heard from Bob in a while. And found something there that Lottie's brother-in-law had posted. And that reads as follows. I'm very sad to post here that my brother-in-law, Bob Lottie, passed away suddenly last week, April 27th. He was at home doing what he loved best, cooking. when he was taken by what appears to have been a heart attack or stroke. From all accounts, it was quick and he did not suffer. Bob was a true character who was interested in many things over the years and was always happy to pass on what he knew to others, and that is the absolute truth. Witness the fact that he did exactly that a few Fridays back. From his time with the Air Force flying and with the Civil Air Patrol to his more recent time on his boat at the East Boston Yacht Club, and following all the latest in cooking gadgets and developing recipes, he was always someone who dove deep into learning all about what he was interested in at the given moment. As happens at a time like this, his family has been very caught up in memories these last few days, and it's pretty amazing how many different things at which Bob worked to become an expert. Facebook was a very big outlet for him in recent years, and I know there are many people here who will be as saddened by his loss as we are. And many in the Horn Family Community Congregation are among those. Our pal Tim from L.A. pointing out that Lottie was the one who turned Tim on to the Unitarian Universalists. Tim remarking on his thread, "It'd be funny to realize that there is a God and that Jesus says, 'Welcome to my kingdom. You made it in, so now start cooking. We need another shift.'" The one thing I had never gotten around to do that I wish I had was to have him walk me ever so patiently through that magnificent salt cod recipe that he kept talking about and I kept wanting to do, but you know, time and equipment didn't make it possible. I'm going to make it a mission now. He gave me a recipe once for a from-scratch brandy cream sweet potato pie. Holy mackerel, you want to talk about a dessert. And so he passed 11 days ago, but the shock was new and fresh and immediate about an hour ago. And I don't have sufficient hubris to say that I know what happens to one's being when one's physical life ends. So I will leave that to those who do. But I will say that Bob Lottie's life was well lived, and that he wrung out of it 60 seconds for every minute run. And wherever the candle flame goes when it blows out, Godspeed, Bob Lottie. Godspeed. Or nothing speed, or deity speed. Light speed, warp speed. Please take care of y'all selves. We're doing the best we can here. Y'all too. Because I want this community to come through this as close to intact as we possibly can. Apparently, from the alert there, from the announcement, it wasn't the Rona. And considering how badly Boston is burning with it, that's a bit of a surprise. But it's a good time to go, because we all got a lot of time to read right now. It's a good time to go and maybe spend a little time with John Donne, D-O-N-N-E. No man is an island, and all of that. So we will go forward with Friday on the front porch with Bob in our hearts, and he was a merry soul. And God knows there's enough nutty to get us through not only three, but more like six or 16 hours of program this evening. Yeah, I understand. Albert in Rhode Island says the best way to satirize Stephen Miller is to compare him to the Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels. I get that, but Pee Wee Herman Goering is funnier. Goering was Luftwaffe, but Pee Wee Herman Goering makes for a funny. And of course, this is the anniversary of the end in 1945. Of the war in Europe. The war viciously blazed on in the Pacific. But the little dirtbag with the Charlie Chaplin mustache had decided to quit the game. And the Third Reich fell apart officially. And the war ended in Europe on this day in 1945. And I guess today is rather an auspicious number because that was 75 years ago. A moment should be taken in appreciation of the sacrifice. They probably made a bigger deal out of it in Mother Russia than we did here. Probably in large part because of their losses. So, where to begin this evening? Well, in those of you, and I think I always think of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, whenever I bring this up, when I ever bring this author up. Mr. Stress was a big fan of the literary works of Dashiell Hammett. You know, Dashiell Hammett, The Thin Man, Red Harvest. Most famously, the Maltese Falcon. It's the stuff that dreams are made of. Bad Bogart impression. Well, there's a line where Sam Spade in the Maltese Falcon slaps around a little punk-ass thug and takes his gun away from him. And in the film, the little thug was played by the magnificent Peter Lorre. And I'm pretty sure the line appears not only in the book, but in the film, because it's a magnificent line. And that line is, the cheaper the hood, the gaudier the patter. Because Dashiell Hammett makes a point of putting some seriously gaudy patter in that character's mouth. I thought of that line when I saw a story over at the Daily Beast about something that racist right-wing asshole sent me the other day, because the aforementioned racist right-wing asshole had watched this documentary. And by the way, as of 10 days from now, it'll be 5 years that since Mr. Stress has gone on, and of course, the toll-free number line that some of you use is named in his honor. It's the Stress Line. But the cheaper the hood, the gaudier the patter. And that applies in spades to a cheesy documentary that is making the rounds of Wingnutistan on the internet, called Plandemic. Plandemic. See, they put an L between the P and the A. Not pandemic, but plandemic. That's where the gaudy patter starts. And the maggots and the bizarre Lulus who can't deal with science, but instead have to see some sort of nefariousness in everything. Well, what Plandemic does, and for God's sakes, please, you know, every evening at this at the end of this program, I thank everyone for sharing the precious finite time of their life here on Earth, engaging in our little long-running conversation. Please, do not waste not one of the precious moments of your finite existence on this gaudy patter. Brother Deacon Asa took one for the team, and that's time that he will never get back. So honor Brother Deacon Asa by not watching this shit. Plandemic is what you get if, like, the Sandy Hook conspiracy and Comet Ping Pong Pizza had a baby. It is that stupid. Will Sommer, writing at the Daily Beast, refers to it as bizarre. I think bizarre is being way too kind. Here's the bottom line. According to this horrible, horrible waste of electrons, Dr. Anthony Fauci is a devious little puppet master who's manipulating the entire country and, in fact, the world. And there's never been any COVID-19 pandemic at all. This thing is so full of bilious crap that YouTube took it down. So full of errant garbage it is that even Facebook, that doesn't like to take shit down, that likes to leave right-wing garbage up, took it down. Just a soupçon. If this will keep you from going looking for this foolishness, a soupçon. According to this massive exercise in Alex Jonesian stupidity, masks activate the Rona. And that's a claim made by a woman named Judy Mikovits. And she's been LARPing and smollicking around and rubbing shoulders and tousling hair with the anti-vaxxers for a while now. And shame on them for doing it. People like Kirstie Alley, who of course is a fucking Scientologist, and some MMA, mixed martial arts stars, and some kind of cornpone comedian have, you'll notice none of these people are immunologists, virologists, epidemiologists, biologists, chemists. No. But by God, they've endorsed it. And it's a way to push a book hustle that's a slur on Dr. Fauci. Now, this is not the Dr. Fauci Appreciation Network. He has a history. He has a biography. And among other things, the glacial slowness with which he responded to the HIV epidemic will forever be a blot on his reputation. He eventually changed position, but while he dithered, people died. But there's a big difference between that and, well, a giant conspiracy between Dr. Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, and the Jews who financed the Wuhan lab that enigmatically engineered COVID-19 and then turned it loose on an unsuspecting world so that Dr. Fauci could pull the strings and destroy Merca's great economy. After the 20 minutes that this thing takes, you feel like maybe you've just drunk some disinfectant. And that's not a good thing. I'm not talking about disinfectant the way that cheap tequila is a disinfectant. I mean, blech. Facebook pulled it among other reasons because of the claim that wearing a mask can make you sick and activate the Rona. And the funniest thing about all of this is that the woman behind it, this Mikovits woman, is already self-discredited. Now, this stupid exercise in trying to get people to kill themselves, she's a great scientist. Just ask her. She'll tell you. She isn't. She was a scientist of sorts back in 2009 when she was the research director at the Whitmore Peterson Institute for Neuroimmune Disease in Nevada. That was the job she got after she was a bartender at a yacht club. Had no idea there were yacht clubs in Nevada. Never mind. But along the way, she made a rather shocking claim that chronic fatigue syndrome was caused by the retrovirus XMRV. She tried to publish it in the journal Science. They did. And between 2000 and in 2011, Science went, oops, our bad, and pulled it because her methodology and her data were 200-proof bullshit. All of her findings turned out to have been the result of the fact that she couldn't run a clean lab. All of her samples were contaminated. Dr. Ivan Oransky with the science research blog Retraction Watch said, And she found that there was a virus present in samples taken from mice with this condition, but it just happened to be that the virus was there. It didn't prove anything. And so when science retracted it, the yacht club bartender decided that that was a conspiracy, that everybody was against her. Mm-hmm. Dr. Aransky said, if you look at her trajectory, it's this kind of trajectory we've seen at Retraction Watch when someone tries to flip the script. No, it's not that my research was flawed and that I was wrong. It's this big conspiracy. And so part of the whole purpose, you got to think a lot of yourself to come up with something like this. Part of the purpose of the whole COVID-19 Trump pandemic is to discredit her. And so, having dipped her toe in the waters of conspiracy, she went ahead and dove on in and started playing footsie with the anti-vaxxers. She co-authors a couple of books with an anti-vax blogger. Apparently, she's joining up with all these other conspiracy theorists and taking part in various online forums and just sowing these seeds of doubt about the safety of vaccines. That from Amy Pisani, the executive director of Vaccinate Your Family. She claims that Dr. Fauci threatened to have her arrested for trying to participate in an NIH study over her bullshit chronic fatigue syndrome screw up. Isn't that interesting? The number of attacks going on against Dr. Fauci. Yesterday, it was Diana Andrade and Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman fabricating a rape story against him. And here's this individual. Is going after him, claiming that he is personally responsible for every death from COVID-19. Around the world, when in fact there's Trump death clock that'll tell you exactly how many deaths in the United States are directly attributable to the inaction of Clorox Claudius. And the interesting thing is that Trump death clock is actually based on science, not whatever it is that Mikovits here was receiving through the fillings in her fucking teeth, you know, via Wi-Fi. Stressful times do ugly things to stressed out people. Among other things, there's a new study out that says mental health in the United States is taking a real whacking as a result of the Trump pandemic. The study was undertaken by Gene Twenge, T-W-E-N-G-E, a professor of psychology at San Diego State University. And her findings are sad and shocking. What she did is she compared answers to questions about mental distress given by 2,032 American adults in April of this year. And she compared that sample with 19,330 demographically similar people in a study that the United States government sponsored in 2018. Now, the questions are fairly simple. Things like, how often did you feel sad in the last month? How often did you feel nervous in the last month? And when Dr. Twenge compared that with the 2018 data, the participants in April of 2020 demonstrated an eightfold likelihood to show positive evidence of mental illness. Serious mental illness. 2020 was 28% of respondents. 2018 was 3.4% of respondents. In 2020, 70% of the respondents met the criteria for moderate to serious mental illness, whereas 22% met that criteria in 2018. And I'm not surprised by this. I trust you're not either. Because it is I forget who it was in an email that referenced Jaws the other night. Oh, it was Gary. It was Gary in New York. Saying that it's not just that there's a shark in the water. It's that there are lots of sharks and they keep multiplying. It's that fear of the unknown. The calls are coming from inside the house. Have you checked the children? Maybe that's part of what makes people more susceptible and or willing to buy into the hocus pocus baloney that's hustled by people like this Mikovits. And by the way, you're gonna love this. According to her, when the government shut down the beaches, might want to get the hockey puck for this one. She says that the lockdown that closed beaches cut people off from healing microbes in the ocean. Healing microbes in the ocean, yes. Because we all know that there's nothing that'll make you feel better then jumping in the ocean and taking a big old gulp of salt water. Anybody who's ever read accounts of sailors adrift at sea in a lifeboat, burning under the blazing sun, parched with thirst, who finally say, screw it, and drink the seawater. Well, you know what? All of a sudden, they no longer have any problems. Because they're dead. Healing microbes in the ocean. And so with the stressors that we're under, that may explain the greater mental health problems. And, of course, not being able to go to a therapist, counselor, psychiatrist, psychologist, because of the shutdown, only makes matters worse. It breaks out demographically kind of interestingly, too. The demographic from 18 to 44 seem to be having the hardest time. Their serious mental distress, according to Dr. Twinge's study, has gone up tenfold. The smallest increases were seen in the 60 and up demographic. That's not entirely sorted out, but she suggests that it could be because older people are more protected from the economic disruptions of the pandemic, and younger adults were more likely to lose their jobs because in the capitalist miracle that was the so-called Trump economy, that demographic was working a lot of shit jobs. And they were clinging on to a financial precipice in the first place. Depression among 18 to 25-year-olds was already on the rise between 2012 and 2017. She surmises it may have something to do with the fact that that age group doesn't interact with other humans that much. Instead, going through life with their heads down, looking at a screen. People with children under 18 at home, they're under pressure too. Because all the things that they used to keep their kids busy in don't exist right now. So it's kind of a reminder that in so many parts of the country, not in the entire country, let's say the entire country, so often mental health goes begging. This little family learned that the hard way back in October. So look, this is a great time for engaging in self-care and making yourself more cognizant of your needs for well-being, not just physical but mental. Reach out. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and I damn sure don't play one on the radio. But this is a community that supports each other. Reach out. Reach out. It's a place to be heard. It's a place to share. It's a place to make real that line that I'm so fond of from the movie Mate One. All we got in common is our misery. So the least we can do is share it. And share it we will. little observation coming from Lou. Wearing a mask has been discussed. For me, an additional and big benefit of wearing a mask or face covering at all is to remind me not to touch my face. That's one of the, I think that's been one of the hardest things for any of us to learn, because it's something about our, it's got something to do with our essential nature as primates that, and you know, you've seen bonobos, you know, picking the lice off of each other and, you know, snacking on them. Oh, let's see. You made it through 50 minutes of the dinner hour in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Hopefully you're doing the dishes by now, now that I'm talking about bonobos picking lice and snacking on them. What do you want? They eat termites, too. But it's part of who we are, and we cannot reject our essential primate nature. I mean, you can't unless you're, some sort of evangelical religious fundamentalist maniac, but I guess then you're free to. Beaches and those healing microbes, by the way, David in South Carolina, Stan, reminds us that beach towns are no longer, down here, beach towns are no longer allowed to require social distancing per the McGubna. He has overruled all town ordinances in the state. Him is king of Corona. It's the syntactical expression that got that, not the idea of reopening the beaches so that South Carolinians can go and get their healing microbes. All right, who's got their video on in the old holler tree around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable? Please turn it off, because otherwise we might not be able to do Friday on the Front Porch, because I won't have the bandwidth to watch video and listen to conversations. Come on, you can do it. Still no. Okay, we'll get there eventually. Steve in New York points out 18 to 25-year-olds. Bob, this is the texting generation. Texting might be talking, but it's not communication. As humans, we need communications and contact, and this shows that. Yeah. Well, you know, I text message. I've gotten to where I'm not crazy about it. I'd much rather have a phone call, because you can make yourself clearer with a conversation than you can with fucking emojis. Jeremy in Vermont points out, subject line capitalism, one of the wonderful side effects of COVID-19 is this depression for those who can't work, mostly due to the fact that so many of us have been brainwashed to work till we die and spend ourselves into oblivion. Ain't that the truth, Jeremy? And with his evening in memoriam, Steve says, globally, we have passed 4 million cases. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump as of May 7th, 2020, 76,928 American people. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump as of April 7th, 2020, 15,526 American people. Total deaths attributable to Donald Trump since April 7th, 2020, 61,402 American people. Steve and I were communicating earlier today, curiously, by text. And we were both playing with numbers. And if you take 70,000, you figure that we got 23 more days in May. And if you're really conservative and you make that 1,000 dead a day, that gets us to 93,000. And if you add to that the 3,000 a day that we expect in June, you are at 183,000 dead on July the 1st, 2020. And it all belongs to Donald J. Trump. The J stands for serial killer. Thanks, y'all, for getting us started on Rico's Challenge. Thank you. Thank you to Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Thank you very kindly indeed. So we're making progress. $22 to go on Rico's Challenge, and then we'll get started on Larry in Liberalville's. Oh, goodness, we probably need to get some of this. Dealt with. He had, I had a note earlier from Bill in PA who said, Bob, I'm getting sick and tired of all these people talking about COVID Caligula's latest meltdown. They act like it's the first time the Tangerine Tiberius ever melted down. They spend much more time than the last time they reported on the last one. Like you said, almost a year ago, if not more. Today is crazier than yesterday, and tomorrow will be crazier still than today. They're all fucking idiots. Fish! Fish! He was worried today about fish. There was a meeting, a luncheon, to which one Devin Nunes was invited. I guess it was lick spittles only. Get the hockey puck. Stop telling us to get the hockey puck, Bob.
We've learned so much. I can understand for the first few weeks.
Now that's Devin Nunes talking, and he wants to talk about our farmers.
But we're learning. We have ventilators. We're learning new ways how to treat this virus. And if we're expecting, as you know, you've been in my district. It's the San Joaquin Valley of California, heavy agricultural area. My folks have been going to work. My folks have been going to work, and because they have to feed this country along with a lot of the folks around here. And you know, if we expect the guys that are cutting meat or working at a grocery store, working in these packing plants, if we expect them to go to work, we ought to go to work as members of Congress.
Yeah. Well, a lot of us don't expect people to be going to work at meat packing plants. And if you're working in a grocery store or you're doing something that absolutely can't not be done, us liberals, us progressives, we expect that you should be getting hazard pay. And that you should probably keep getting it once this is over, because one of the great lies that has been exposed in all of this is that somehow or another people were barely worth what they were being paid in the first place when they were probably worth 2, 3, 4, 5 times more. I can't tell you the number of times back when I'd be running around and have the radio on and have that Medal of Freedom recipient, Flush Flimball, the oxymoron on. And he'd be talking about how, well, my friends, these people who do these low-level jobs, the liberals want to make them wealthy when their jobs just aren't that important in the first place. I mean, why don't they just admit it? If you want them to make $15 an hour, why don't you want them to make $30 an hour? Let's just say that, and then none of us will be able to go to the grocery store. Hand me another pill. I like to chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. Well, turns out, not that this is a newsflash or anything, Rush Limbaugh's a dick. But maybe he was right for once in his miserable stinking life. Maybe he was right. Maybe some of us were asking for too little. Maybe the people who keep our economy going, maybe the people who carry the goddamn billionaires on their backs deserve a hell of a lot more than the billionaires have been fucking paying. Somebody cue up against the wall, you redneck mothers. Let's go back to Devin Nunez.
And I'll just leave it at that.
I will say I got you all of your permits necessary for...
And now things are going to go off the rails. Because that was all a dig at Nancy Pelosi, because Nancy Pelosi won't let the Republicans come back and cough all over the Democrats and try to kill them and get their majority back that way. And throughout everything that Dev has said, Clorox Claudius didn't hear a word of it. When we get into the meat of this clip, this could be something from the Fire Sign Theater. Way back when. This could be that sort of wry, dry comedy that it takes a minute before you start laughing. It could be. But sweet Jesus, it isn't. It's the illegitimate, unelected president of the United States of America. It's the guy who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue only by operation of a racist anachronism from our filthy slavery past. The Electoral College.
From the federal government for water. You know, we throw millions of gallons a day of water into the Pacific Ocean that comes from up north.
We throw it. You got that? We throw it. Maybe it's in water balloons. Buckets? I don't know. We throw it. Maybe we're just bailing with our two hands formed into a cup and just heaving for all we're worth. We throw it into the Pacific Ocean. Take that, Pacific Ocean!
I say, how come those fields are all barren? They're beautiful land, all barren, brown.
Because it's a desert, dumbass! You know, like Las Vegas is a desert. Like it was never meant for people to live there. I mean, Jesus, the Colorado River doesn't even reach the ocean anymore. We've fucked it up so badly. Yeah. I was watching, I've mentioned that I've been watching Bosch. And there was a scene, I think in, what, season three? Two? Don't know. Season two, where Bosch's partner, J. Edgar, complained about having to go to Las Vegas, and he says, "How can people stand to live in that desert? It's a desert, for God's sakes." And Bosch responds to him and says, "Los Angeles is a desert too." He says, "Yeah, but we got the Pacific Ocean." And just as flat as a pancake, dry as can be, Bosch responds, "Still a desert."
And then they'll have a little patch like this, a little patch in a corner, or a little patch on one side, and it's beautiful green. You could see it was so... And I said, how come so much of it, 90%, 95%, it looks like a desert, and you have this... He said, "We don't have water." I said, "You mean you have a drought?"
No, he means it's a desert, and deserts don't have water. Oh, the spirochetes are struggling. And the most hilarious part of all this is that he thinks he's being brilliant. He thinks he's being a deep thinker, a guy who has ideas about stuff. When all it is the prattlings of a deeply disordered mind.
This is a long time ago we met, right? Right at the beginning, before I got elected. And I said, you mean you have a drought? He said, no, we don't have a drought. We send millions of gallons of water out to the ocean to protect a very, I never say anything's unimportant. I think everything's.
Yeah, he thinks everything's important. Just some things are more important than other things. Right. Here's a fun word for him. Salination. Because human agricultural sedentary society sorted out the whole irrigation idea pretty quickly. Mesopotamia, Sumeria, Sumer, Babylon. You know, the land between the river, land between the rivers, Mesopotamia, Greek. But there's a problem. You can irrigate and irrigate and irrigate, and for a while things will bloom. But after a while, the soil becomes salty, even if you're using fresh water. And then shit doesn't grow anymore. Ask the early irrigators, the early European colonialist invader irrigators of Australia about what happened in the Murray River Basin. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, you're back to desert again, and it doesn't matter how much you irrigate.
It's important to protect, go ahead, what's the name?
The smelt, Delta Smelt.
Yeah. So you have a Delta Smelt that's not doing well.
Delta,
it's getting no water.
Delta.
And it will do a lot better if it had water. But they send millions and millions of... Is that seriously? Is that the only reason? That's the reason?
He's free-forming. Is that the only reason? Delta Smelt. And they gave it a lot of water, but it's not doing good.
And they send it out there.
Yeah, that in
for the Delta.
That
salmon.
In salmon. Yes.
Wow. It's
salmon. Farmers are very thankful for recognizing the important work that you've done, not only in San Joaquin Valley but all over the country. And I'll just say that's why they're out working, and I think we should be working. And
with the water though, I said so. What has to happen? Well, you need approvals from Congress, from this, from that. You need all sorts of approvals, but you need it from commerce more importantly than anything. I got every approval for you, and you get a lot of the state approvals done through Kevin and yourself and others. All you need now is the signature of the governor, and those millions of gallons of wasted water going into the Pacific, that's like a drop in the bucket. Doesn't mean anything to the Pacific. All of that water would come right down all the way into Los Angeles. And, yeah. In Los Angeles...
In Los Angeles, is this the Derp Rector's cut version of the plot to Chinatown? And what amazes me is to think of Emery and Marveline sitting there in their matching Barca loungers in the Ballerina Swan Lake trailer court and country club.
Emery, he's just so brilliant.
Well, I know, Marveline. You can tell he's smart because he talks like what a smart man talk like.
I had a house in Los Angeles. You couldn't. I sold it. You know why?
Now we're back to the days when he owned a house in Los Angeles. Yeah, those were the days when we walked around when it was the fashion to wear an onion tied to your belt.
I mean anything to the Pacific. All of that water would come right down all the way into Los Angeles. And, in Los Angeles, I had a house in Los Angeles. I sold it. You know why I sold it? Because Secret Service says you can't come here anymore. I said I might as well sell it. But I had a house, and you couldn't have water. You couldn't water your grass. They said, you're not allowed to water your grass. And then you look at this massive turn. They had a turn. It takes a day to turn. It's like a big faucet. And they turn it, and it veers all the water out into the Pacific. It's crazy. So we're all set, except...
I can't even be angry about this. Oh, God, he's gone. There's nothing there. The spirochetes are even going, fuck it, I'm done. There's a big spigot, and it takes a day to turn it.
Doing a pretty good job of keeping the swirly straw out of the rot gut tequila, but
whew!
He's the verbal equivalent of if you tried to play Pink Floyd on that little play school piano with, you know, 8 keys.
You need Gavin's signature. If you get Gavin's signature, you're going to have water from Los Angeles all the way up. Yeah. And it's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. I thought it was a drought. I said, you missed. He said, no, we have tremendous amounts of water, but we send it out to the Pacific Ocean. And it was over the smelt. So if you can get his signature.
Well, I know, during this time of crisis, we need to work with the governor, and I thank you for working with our governor, who's obviously not a supporter of yours. But there is a serious issue there that the governor needs to recognize that we have a water crisis in our state that you've recognized, and he needs to drop the lawsuits that he's brought and work with us.
Well, we've gotten along very well, Gavin Newsom. We've gotten very well with regard to COVID-19, as we call it.
COVID-19, as we call it. Nobody knew until he said that. Nobody. Not a single soul. COVID-19, as we call it. And then just a quick trip over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. They got a guy there named Pete Hegseth. And they let him get in front of a camera, and he praises the patriots who are refusing the stay-at-home orders and social distancing. Yeah, he had a little problem with the way Clorox Claudius is describing it. He said, I don't love the warrior talk, but I do think you're going to need that kind of ethos and that spirit to put freedom before fear. Listen, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of misinformation. The experts have been telling us hundreds of thousands of people are going to die. Now that we're learning more, herd immunity is our friend. Healthy people getting out there and are going to have some courage. We've seen courage. We'll talk about it later. In Texas, where people are defying ridiculous orders, that takes courage. That's not easy. So I think that spirit, too, it's American spirit, frankly. It's in full supply and ready to go. If some of our experts and some of our leaders would just get out of their way, they're drunk on power. It's time to open up. That's my sense. So according to a guy at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, people are supposed to go out and waller around and smolik and larp and carry on, make sure they get the Rona real good so that Pete can have herd immunity, because Pete Hegseth, by the way, claims he has never washed his hands ever. Said that last year, and by way of explanation, said that, well, that's because germs aren't real. Well, that's about as much insanity as I can handle without group help. Let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable inside the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
Now that you got me screaming at him through the screen.
Sorry.
Because I know about the water system, how the water works in this state.
I kind of figured you did. I mean, working on water projects and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, the Central Valley Project is a big thing up here, which was part of the New Deal. which helped build the whole North State with Shasta Dam, our North State, not, we call it the North State. They can call San Francisco Bay Area the Bay Area. But the Delta, there's a big old ass canal that runs all the way from the Delta to L.A. And it runs packed full of water all summer long.
So,
and the farmers get an allotment off of that. And if they use up their allotment, because the biggest thing down the San Joaquin is the aquifer that's under this down there is going dry.
It's tapped out.
Yeah, they have to drill deeper and deeper to get any water out of it.
Well, did you happen to watch? No spoilers. It's been out for a while. Did you happen to watch the latest season of Goliath?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was all about.
Water.
Yeah, it was over a year ago I watched it.
Yeah, I guess it may have been that long.
It just runs through my mind because I still got Ozark in my mind. That's the latest thing I binged watched.
Well, it was all about water and asshole billionaires trying to control it. It was kind of like a reboot of Chinatown without the Chinatown and with Billy Bob Thornton instead of Jack Nicholson.
Okay, I'm starting to remember now. The big rancher or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they had the tunnel.
Exactly. It was a diversion tunnel.
Yeah. Now it's coming back to me. I said, the old scene. I've slept a few days since then. I've had a heck of a week with computers and things happening here.
How far are you into your no shower? Are you still
counting the days?
No shower, no toilet paper.
I still do it, but I've broken it a few times because now we have Charmin.
Oh, well, okay, yeah.
I mean, I couldn't...
Living the dream.
I couldn't deal with that single ply at all.
Oh, no, that's somewhere between crepe paper and fine grit sandpaper.
Yeah, just feeling it. I didn't use it, but just feeling it. But I had an emergency one day, and I said, I don't want to get in the shower again. So I broke down and used the Charmin. I took one roll away from Judy's stash that I got. And it's still in there. She uses it a little bit and uses it.
Yeah, I'll bet she didn't even begrudge it.
I didn't even tell her yet.
Yet.
So she still doesn't
I like
know.
The yet part. That's what makes it art.
We've had other things happen around here. We were a three-computer tower house, and the tower I had in here at Skype Command just took a dump the other day, and the screen went squirrely. It wouldn't do anything, so I just unplugged it, and then I robbed the newest computer tower that it was in Judy's room, so she was using it because she... had too much trouble with their laptop being so damn slow. She wanted something. Now she complains she can't sit at the computer, so she wants another laptop. So she was coming in here the other night to look on the computer, and we were going to look see to buy something. She comes in here, and she doesn't set the brakes on her walker. She's got like a seat on her walker. And she turned around, and the walker went out from under her, and she fell on the floor. So I had to call 911. And the first thing 911 asked me is, anybody got COVID in your house or has had COVID? I said, no, you don't leave. So I just opened the front door and waited. CDF came. The fire department always comes, it's usually a three guy. Well, this in this case, it was two guys and a gal crew, and then the ambulance always comes later. And they got her out of here, and naturally they took her off to the hospital to get examined. And then I got a call at 2 o'clock in the morning to come pick her up. So I go to the hospital, and I go into the entryway of the emergency room. I go, "What's this new old building they got out there? They've got a nurse guard out there to come and confront you if you try to go into the emergency room, all gloved up and masked up and everything. What's your business?" And I just turned around. I could see Judy through the glass. I said, "I'm here to pick her up." And she goes, "Okay, I'll get her." She wheeled out in the wheelchair, put her in the car, and off we went. So that was my night. So she's bruised up, but doing okay.
Oh, thank heaven. I hate to go through that.
Still haven't bought. She want a smaller computer, a laptop that doesn't weigh so much. I don't know what to get her until we'll attempt to get it done.
Oh, by the way, that season of Goliath dropped October 2019. That's the one with Dennis Quaid.
Right, and we watched it right when it dropped too. Yeah. So, and I think, you know, because there was a couple series we were watching Yellowstone at the time, or we'd already watched Yellowstone, but we're waiting for the third season of Yellowstone to drop now.
Oh,
go ahead. I'm in the house today because the solar furnace got turned on. There's no wind. And it's 99 degrees outside. And the man cave was like 102 when I was out there at 2 o'clock inside. No air movement. It's just still as can be. No breeze, no nothing.
Ooh, that sounds brutal.
So I had to service my outdoor AC compressor, clean the leaves out of it and stuff, get it all ready to run. Now I've got the thermostat set 78. If it kicks on, it kicks on. So I'm ready to roll. Won't be long. We'll break 100, I'm sure.
No, oh, I have no doubt. So I've been meaning to check it. What's your tomato status? Will you be having a tomato on the 4th of July?
No, I didn't. I didn't even go. I haven't gone out to get it, tomatoes. I just, with this COVID thing come up, I just shined it on.
Yeah, that happens. That happens. I need to send thanks out to Louie. Louie finished off Rico's challenge, got us started on Larry and Liberalville's Mother's Day challenge. There's $97 to go on that. Thank you, Louie. Thank you a ton. Let's see. apparently, I have flustered Jeremy in Vermont. "Say what, Edith?" is the subject line. Did Trump just claim that the water shortage in California is man-made, which it is from poor use and overuse, but falsely claim that it's man-made because it's diverted on purpose to hurt the people? Well, yeah, he did. I don't think he knows from one word to the next what he's saying. He's just gone.
If he wants to kill off the fishery, he's crazy.
Yeah, what, Tracy?
Did you guys see his interview the other day with David Muir and the ABC Nightly News? Because we get both showings. We get the 3:30, which is the 6 o'clock showing on the 3:30, 6:30 East Coast feed, and then we get our own 6:30 feed. And David Muir was looking at him like, "Say what, Eva?" It's just like, what? And he was just rambling. And, of course, there was the Blame Obama moment. Because, you know, because he was, David Muir was asking about, you know, the response to the pandemic. And he kept saying, "Well, the previous administration left us high and dry." Motherfucker, you're the one that closed down the office that was supposed to help out with pandemics. You dumb bastard. And on. And I'm just sitting there like, my ears started bleeding. It was the most bizarre, rambling thing that I've ever heard.
Oh wait! Oh no! I got more bizarre, and I got more rambling.
Did I forget? Hey, but guess what? I just came back into my house because our house got evacuated.
What?
My fucking idiot neighbor. The other day, he asked. He wanted to. We have a brick wall that we a ugly cement block wall that the previous owners built, and he was asking me about, you know, tearing it down or what have you. And I said, well, that's not my purview. That's Jan, and I did forget to mention it to her that he wanted to talk, but you know, it just slipped my mind. And she comes charging into my room this earlier today and screaming, why didn't you tell me? What did you? I'm like, wait, pump the brakes, bitch. What are you yelling at me for? And she's like, well, they're doing this wall and they said that you talk. I said, no. I said, I did forget to mention it to you, but I never figured that he would go ahead and do that shit without talking, you know, coming and knocking on our door. Well, anyway, with all this noise, banging and stuff, they're fucking handyman. Busted our gas line.
Oh, for
so
whatever happened to call before you dig?
That part. That's what Todd says. Everybody knows, because I texted him, and he's like, "Well, everybody knows to call before you dig." I said, "Apparently, this motherfucker didn't." So we were, and then his stupid wife was gonna go back in the house, and I'm like, "Bitch, stay your ass outside, please." I didn't say that to her, but that was what the those conversations that you have in your head that you have to filter.
Stay
before
outside,
they come
Becky.
Out your mouth.
Yeah,
Becky, you know, and it's like, oh, God. So, yeah, 2 hours outside. Fortunately, today was actually, it's cooled down some, because if this had happened yesterday, I would have killed everybody involved. But we actually had a breeze and it was fine. But yeah, 2 hours. And then once they told us to go back in the house, we came back in the house and had to go back out because that there was no gas leak in here, but it still reeked, especially my office, because my office is right next door, right next to where the dumbass broke the gas line. I was just like, motherfucker. It's like, yes, call before you dig.
So, Tracy, wait a second. So the guy was going to tear that wall down, the cement brick wall you're talking about?
I have no idea what I don't know what they started doing, but again, so right after I had calmed Jan down from yelling about him, I said, honey, look. She's like, if they tear anything up, if they mess up, then I'm going to make them clean up. I said, look, you don't know what's going to happen yet. They might come over and offer to clean up any mess or what have you. Just let it lie. Leave it alone. And, you know, we'll handle it when we need to handle it. Don't go over there acting like Karen.
So, Tracy, at least while he was working, was he playing that old John Cougar Mellencamp song? When the walls come tumbling down?
No, baby, no. That part, no. And so, and then when they broke the gas, I mean, it was so loud, y'all, that I could hear it in the house. It sounded like a geyser. You know, like when somebody runs into a fire hydrant, that's how loud it was with the whooshing. And
oh,
like,
shit. That's a serious high pressure line.
Yeah, it was because basically from what I know more about the gas lines in my neighborhood. So apparently it's one main gas line and each house is branched. And so they hit. I'm like, so not only do you bust the gas line, but motherfucker, you bust ours. It wasn't even theirs. So we had to call. And then the best part about all this, we were the ones to call the fire department and the gas company. They didn't.
Well, here's a question, Tracy. So he busted your gas line. Does the gas company have any recourse against, you know, shit for brains?
Well, this is, and herein lies the problem, or the question. because when I do get this, when I do get the bill, and it's probably going to be a whopper.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. They're going to send you the bill, and you. Oh, fuck.
So then and that's why I told Jan, do not say anything. Do not antagonize him or anything like that, because when I get the bill, I will go over there. I need you not to be a white woman right now and let me handle it. That part. I don't need you to be Karen. I need you to let me, because all the utilities are in my name anyway. So I will be the one that goes over and I will, you know, present said bill. I just hope he doesn't come over here and to apologize or anything. I just want him to stay away from the house until I find out if we're, you know, because not only did we, so the first, when we first initially called the gas company, they had the first person came out, but because the damage was so extensive, they had to have this big, huge truck come out to fix it. And that was before the fire department came. I mean, and see, here's another thing. Because I am so fully aware of my privilege being married to a white woman, not that, you know what I'm saying, and living in Encino, because, of course, I go there to what the response time would have been had this been in the neighborhood that I grew up in. We'd still be waiting. But the gas company and the fire department were here in less than 10 minutes. So, I mean, again, these are those things that I'm acutely aware of, living where I live and being married to who I'm married to. But, yeah, the whole neighborhood reeked of gas, y'all. I mean, it was bad. I mean, not fortunately, nothing blew up or anything like that. But, thoughts were going through my head, like, why the fuck are we calling the gas company and y'all didn't even think to say, you know, maybe we should call the gas company over this? So when I did call the fire department, they're like, are you outside or in the house? I'm like walking, then I get out the house, you know, just, you know, you should be fine, but to be safe, get out the house. Do not turn on any switches. Do not turn any, because I had the TV, you know, we had TV on and stuff like that. So do not turn anything off because there might be a spark. Ugh. Yeah, so that's how I spent my Friday.
Did you ask the guy how he voted in 2016?
I did. Well, you know what? I doubt if he voted for Trump. He's Muslim. Well, this is crazy combination. His father is, I think, white, but his mother was Muslim, and then his parents got divorced and his mother married another woman.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, no, I don't think he voted for Trump. No. I mean, you never, I don't think so. I mean, he's a nice person. I mean, you know, I have no problems with him. He's actually very nice and his wife is very sweet. But I think the elevator doesn't go all the way up on this one, because I need to ask this, and I'm just asking for a friend. So Bob, you're gone.
Yes.
You're out and about, and this is Bob, Sparky, any of the men that are married to, you know, anybody that's married to anybody, but I'm asking the men who are married to their, you know, to women or what have you, or just spouses in general, but and have children, small children at home. Now, your wife calls you to tell you that you had to evacuate the house because your worker ruptured the gas main. Aren't you on the way home at that point?
Yes.
He has yet to come home.
Maybe he knows better.
No, she would. No, she's really. No, she's not that kind of wife. No. Mm-mm.
If logistically possible, you know, like if Karen was stuck in the middle of her mail route, she can't leave that mail because she's responsible for it.
He owns his own company.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, that's on him.
It's like I can't even, because Jan and I and our other, the neighbors on the other side of our house, we're all looking at each other like, where's this motherfucker at? Why is he not home? Because it's her, she has a baby. I mean, just now toddler, you know, maybe a year old or what have you. And like the daughter, I think is maybe 4 or 5 years old. So you've left your wife at home to deal with this because obviously she didn't have enough brains in her head to call her or the guy that broke, you know, ruptured the gas line, didn't have enough brains between the two of them to say, yeah, maybe we should call the gas company and the fire department. That part. So yeah, that's how. And on every top of everything else, I'm yet still waiting for my unemployment. I have called. The good news is I actually got a hold of my state senator and my state representative. My state representative emailed me, and I attached stuff about what's going on. And my state senator, they told me to call today if I didn't hear anything from EDD, but of course they didn't answer. So hopefully by Monday, because yeah, still no money. Ain't life grand? And then we have the fucking idiot blaming. Now, what do you say? So our water supply in California, y'all, is controlled by a big old spigot?
Yeah, and it's all the Delta Smelt's fault.
As in the Delta Smelt, as up in Sacramento Delta? Or
San Joaquin, Sacramento Delta. The Delta is where the two rivers come together.
Right. So it's y'all's fault. Is Sacramento's fault now?
It's a fish, and, you know, we're trying to save it, but it's not doing very well. Not very well at all.
Governor's fault.
It's Gavin's fault for not, changing the policy. He can't.
Yeah.
That was the product of many lawsuits. It was a settlement of lawsuits over, I think, under the Endangered Species Act going way, way back. And there was an agreement reached, and it was approved by, like, a federal judge. I mean, this case took, like, 15 or 20 years to resolve. And it's not like you're going to undo it. It's not like a governor could do anything about it, you know? there's a certain amount of the Delta water that's allotted to the smelt so that, it, you know, to prevent it from going, you know, extinct. And so it was a resolution of a court case is what it was.
We're doomed. Oh, by the way, I've been going
Wait. That's for the weird dude.
That got me laughing.
We're doomed.
We're doomed. So I've been going to various and some because Weight Watchers, all their meetings are virtual now. So I've been going to different Weight Watchers meetings across the country. So I've been to Boston, I've been to Connecticut, and I've been to New York. The responsible
states. That's Connecticut.
And Connecticut. And so then I went to a meeting in Atlanta. And a meeting in Shreveport, Louisiana, because that's where my family is from. And you know, I have.
Well, that's where our buddy Jack is. Writes in
from
down there. Yeah, Jack in Shreveport. Yeah.
Jack in Shreveport, duh, Tracy. So, you know, my main reason for doing this is also, you know, to keep me busy and to keep me from losing my mind. But really, is to see how each state is dealing with this. And I tell you, sweet women and everything, but you can hear it that they are just chomping at the bit to get on out there to get their hair did and their hair and the nails did and hang out with the girls. And I'm thinking, fuck. Whereas I actually did a meeting in London this morning, 1 a.m. my time. Yeah, I haven't been sleeping. It was 1 a.m. my time at 8. 9:30 their time. Do you know their lockdown is so severe they're only allowed out an hour a day? In London?
Yeah.
Did you guys know that?
It's ugly.
Yeah. Actually, I have friends there. Yeah.
I had no clue. She was telling me about, you know, the things that in Paris, you know, I'm just listening to the difference between what they're doing in Europe as opposed to here, And she's so funny. She, you know, because the meeting starts at like, it started at 9:30 their time. But the half an hour before the meeting is our, you know, time for people to check in. And so I was that whole 15, 20 minutes before, you know, we were just talking. And she's like, yeah, we hate your president.
Oh, yeah. Did you happen to see it?
By the way, Darlene in Connecticut said, no way. Tracy, you've been to Connecticut?
Yes.
Shoot. Sorry I missed you. I hope you didn't blink. Otherwise, you missed us for sure, LOL. You were virtually in Connecticut.
I was virtually in Connecticut. I can't
do that. But Tracy, did you see in Amsterdam what they were doing? Or did the restaurants there? They were building little glass greenhouses for couples to sit in along the canals. So, and then the servers would come by and slide the food in through these, and you know, they were all PPE'd up and everything like that. So
lovely.
I mean, Europe is,
was anybody wearing like fucking parkas or anything? Because I'm getting a little frustrated here in Appalachia, I gotta say. There's Sparky talking about up in the 90s there in northern, in the real North California. It is 63 degrees in the studio here right now, and that's only because it's a few degrees warmer than what it is outside, thanks to all the computer equipment generating heat in here. Our high tomorrow is 46.
That's a polar vortex they said was coming.
That's cool. Yeah, it's a polar vortex. Portland, Oregon's going to be 84 tomorrow, so eat your hearts out. And we have beautiful weather.
Blow me, Otto, okay? I mean, just...
Sorry. Didn't mean to rub it in.
I read about that
rub it in, you wouldn't have said it, motherfucker, so don't even try.
Nothing like the wrath of
reality spoken here.
Yeah, really?
No,
I would not want to be living in L.A.
I mean, until things change the dynamic of the opening of the program this evening, I was going to open by saying, hey, everybody, guess what it's doing here at my place? It's raining! Because the first chance we have at crossing 70 degrees is a week from today, and the forecast calls for thunderstorms. I mean, we can socially distance ourselves here. There's something like 1,600 miles of trails or something like that in the national park here where I live. And you can get on them and not see people. And the only thing that keeps anybody from doing that is the fact that you have to be willing to be completely soaked by rain. I mean, this is, you know, on top of the Trump pandemic, on top of Trump's goddamn plague, we just happen to have, I don't know if this is an El Nino, a fuck all of y'all. I don't know what it is. But it's been 4 months of February, and I'm getting a little irked.
Well, Bob, I want you to know that the rain is just God's tears crying over your suffering. I'll hang up now because he's mad. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You can just never do that again, okay, Scott? By the way, talking about people having to stay home, Robert in Australia writes, subject line, COVID-19 fines. People who leave their home in New South Wales without reasonable excuse could be fined up to $11,000 and face 6 months in jail. But New South Wales' top cop insists we're not a police state. Each state and territory has laid out varying fines for breaking the coronavirus rules. There are two main sets of fines. The first set applies to those who disobey social distancing measures.
that have been put in place and covers things like not gathering in groups of more than two people. The second set is for people who are meant to be in self-quarantine for 2 weeks, namely travelers who have recently returned from overseas. If caught breaching quarantine, these fines are more severe. In South Australia, it's $25,000 and maybe 6 months in jail, which in Australia, they spell G-A-O-L, and I think that's the way it should be spelled. 25 large. Well, I'll tell you what, you could do something for the California state budget if you went around handing out $25,000 fines or even $11,000 fines to those dickheads in Orange County who went running out to the goddamn beach.
That part.
Yeah.
By the way, Jeremy in Vermont. Jeremy in Vermont, of course. Bob, stop telling us how bad your weather is at your house. Starting tonight, Vermont is set to get record snowfall through Mother's Day. I know that. It's going to snow in the upper elevations of West Virginia, too, this weekend. And that's why we have a rule. There's a rule here. It may have to be amended. The standing rule for people who want to grow gardens in West Virginia, hi, Roger, is never plant your garden before Mother's Day. And now, apparently, Mother's Day's out. We may have to change it to never plant your garden before Memorial Day.
And that
my corn's up about 6 inches. The radishes have popped up. The tomatoes are in fresh pots.
A fresh radish just rinsed off out of the ground is a world different from anything that comes from the grocery store. They're not even the same thing.
I got green strawberries on the vine, and my pepper plants, I'm already starting to see a couple of blossoms, although they're still really small plants. But now the pepper plants are in a hoop house, so I'm cheating a little bit.
Oh, now you make me want fresh radishes.
Well, mine are still about 3 weeks out.
How's the other crop doing?
Inside the greenhouse, they're looking beautiful. They haven't gotten planted out yet. That's going to happen in another week or two. And the pepper plants that are mixed in down there in the greenhouse, they're doing a hell of a lot better than the ones in my hoop house up here. There's about 400 plants in that hoop house in 5 gallon pots.
Oh, my God.
Oh, by the way, I just had a note from Jimmy, and this is worth mentioning. Has everybody seen the video of, let me set this up a little bit better. Remember back when he started Bush War II, you remember when Dim Leader flew over to the Iraq and carried a plastic turkey in for the troops on Thanksgiving Day? We all remember that, don't we?
I actually don't remember that.
The fake turkey, yeah. because, you know, he couldn't be trusted with a real one. Well, today...
No, he couldn't carry himself.
Today, Mike Pencilneck Geek was caught on a hot mic asking if he could carry empty PPE boxes into a nursing home for the optics, for the image.
That was yesterday.
It was on Jimmy Kimmel.
It was yesterday, not today. Right, but... I trust what you
did. And they made Jimmy Kimmel apologize for what he said last night.
You're kidding.
No, I read it. I read it on Democratic Underground, I think.
He's on ABC, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so ABC.
The network made him apologize?
ABC is very kind of a right-wing network, but I don't know if Sinclair owns ABC. But you watch their news.
No, Disney owns ABC.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, Disney's having enough trouble. I mean, they ought to tend to their fucking closed-up amusement park.
What did he call him? An empty suit carrying empty boxes, the perfect metaphor for this presidency?
Yeah.
That is perfect. He didn't have to apologize for that.
It's the straw man.
Do you know offhand, Bob, in the timeline of great moments in W's regime, whether the fake turkey... And believe me, you can fit that on one half of an index card, you know. But the turkey, the hollow plastic turkey incident, where does that fit in the timeline where he goes and the guy jumps up in the back and starts throwing shoes at
him. The fake turkey is way pre shoe dude.
Well, yeah. We know what to look for in terms of Trump and Pence. Gentlemen, take your shoes off.
There should be a statue in what's the major town in Iraq of the shoe dude, you know, and actually doing it in the center square. That's amazing.
He slipped off his other loafer and tossed it before they got to him.
Oh,
you know? Yeah, really. Or within the process. And the only reason I remembered that is the other night on PBS, American Experience did a 2-night, 4-hour tribute or documentary to George W. Bush, part of their American President series.
Oh, no.
And maybe I'm not suffering enough out here. I watched it. And they played that clip, and I said, my God, I long for those long-ago innocent days when the worst we had to worry about was a doofus getting shoes thrown at him, you know?
Yeah.
And here we are, not too many years later, Jesus.
Does anybody know how much that war cost? You know, I heard that original cost was $1 trillion, but all the other, over the years, it's ballooned out to $1.5 trillion, or $3.5 trillion, so I don't know. Because Obama did a reaccounting of a lot of the federal debt when he came in his first term. And they were kind of shocked when they found out how much they spent on that war. It's a lot of money. And it's a lot of wasted money that could have gone into highways or infrastructure.
I heard it was more like $7
trillion. Oh, wow.
With all the wars and all the shit we're doing.
Yeah, but that's an example of a failed state, you know. That's a huge amount of money. And for what? To line somebody's pocket? To line Dick Cheney's pocket? You know?
Somebody
had to pay for his new heart?
Yeah, it cost only $1 trillion.
Oh, just take him down to the U-Testing machine at the drugstore and put in a new tube or two. That's old. Who remembers U-Testing machine?
Well, have you seen?
They still got one at the grocery store I go to.
Oh wow!
Have you watched the film Vice? It's a good movie.
Yeah. You know, another one. Getting back to the Iraq War, so called. There was a maybe 10 years ago, 12 years ago, a documentary called Why We Fight. If you've never seen that documentary, Why We Fight, check that out. Because it, you know, it talks about all the money and the vested interests in these wars of choice and where the money goes and what doesn't get taken care of because the money's being funneled into the military industrial congressional complex is what Eisenhower was going to say in his original
speech. And they made
speech.
Him take out congressional.
They blew pencil yep. that. Yeah.
Smedley Butler nailed it, didn't he, Scott?
He sure did.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, catching up with just how crummy a Mother's Day weekend this is going to be, Darlene in Connecticut says, rain? That's nothing. My upper elevation in Connecticut is scheduled for snow overnight into tomorrow and frigid temps. The last time that happened was May 9th, 1977. It destroyed all the lilac trees on my parents' property that were in full bloom when I was a child around 11 years old. The groves took 2 years to recover. I now have my own one little lilac tree on the side of the house that's been growing for 6 years. It's budding, but not in bloom. My, how things have changed. I hope the snow and extreme cold doesn't kill the buds. I hope the tree still blooms. Darlene, is there anybody you could get to, like, maybe come and put a, I don't know how big it is, but it, you know, like get one of those contractor garbage bags and put over it and maybe protect it a little bit against the frost. This is just crazy.
Lilacs are nice trees.
Oh, they're beautiful.
They have nice flowers.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah, but they have a nice fragrance. You can smell them like 20 feet away.
There are places in northern West Virginia where they're just everywhere. I remember long, long ago when I had a car with an open top, driving through there, and it was just like driving through a really high quality perfume factory. It was lovely. Scott, Jeremy wants you to know, don't forget when he got sick and threw up on someone from another country. Oh no, that was W's daddy. Oh, and when he went to Haiti with Clinton.
Daddy Bush, yeah.
And when he
went broccoli.
When he went to Haiti with Clinton after that Christmas earthquake and was caught on camera by, I think, 60 Minutes wiping off his hands on the back of Clinton after he shook the hands of a poor child.
Oh, God. No.
No, these things happen.
I remember watching that.
Have you turned on the jet heater, Sparky?
The car wash? Sounds like we're in the car wash.
Yeah, over by that jet dryer.
That was better.
Hey, there John. John Britovo's here. We haven't heard from John in a while. Hey, John Britovo, how are you, brother?
I'm doing fine, Bob. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, okay. I've been in the room all the time. I made a couple. I didn't know if I was getting through though. I had to leave and come back in though. How in the hell you been doing, Bob?
We're just sitting here being socially distant and watching the rain.
I'm sweating my ass out in here, Bob.
Yeah, you can blow me too, okay?
I've been sweating my ass off.
I think we've had one day that we got above 75 degrees so far. One.
Oh, shit.
And a couple of years ago, early April, Agnes and I took a hike up to the rim of the gorge in early April, and it was like near 90. So,
well, howdy.
Yeah, and it's driving me crazy.
It'll come, Bob.
It's barbecue season, John Britovo.
I know it. I figured you'd be out smoking something.
Well, I got to put the new smoker together. It's still sitting in a box because I can't get.
Oh, you got a new smoker.
The other one fell to pieces.
Bob, you've been on my mind, buddy. I'm going to hook you up.
Yeah,
I am definitely going to hook you up. Yeah, I am indeed. We have a Blue Dot family member up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. He is a chef. And a mighty fine chef he is.
Oh, my.
But he likes, yes, I'm telling you, buddy, he is just, he's one of those top of the line kind of guys. Anyway, he has a daughter who runs a honey shop. And believe me, I think I've told you before, I did not know the varieties of honey that you can get until I met this guy. And he sends me honey all the time from around the world.
Oh, man, oh,
and,
man.
I have honey that's spicy.
Pound for pound.
Honey that tastes like marshmallows.
Yeah, my two favorites are sourwood and orange blossom.
Oh, okay. I got some orange blossom. I don't know where this one comes from. I swear it tastes just like cotton candy. You squeeze it into your mouth, and it's just like you just took a bite of cotton candy.
Oh, my goodness.
But anyway, honey being the main ingredient to make mead...
Which I have made.
Yes. Have you?
Yes, I have.
I had, this is the best mead. He sent me two bottles, one called Viking Blood and another one I can't remember. One was a red one and one was a white mead. I have never tasted such fine shit in my life. And anyway, I turned it on to a few friends of mine and they loved it.
Oh.
And then I did indeed think of you, Bob. And I mentioned you to Chris, that's the guy up in Massachusetts, and I asked him, and he just sent me a picture the other day of some new mead, and I told him I was going to send, because so I need your mailing address again, because I don't have it anymore. I sent you something one time, and I don't,
that was
I
have, my, that have was, your that address. Was my, that was my Trump balloon. I will provide that to you offline. I'll messenger that to you.
Good. Do that, Bob, because I'm telling you.
Yeah, I made it.
I've never tasted it.
I made it. I made it years and years and years ago, way many years ago. I was big into brewing, and I made several batches of mead. Making mead is harder than making beer, because the sugars that you get in a beer wort are more readily converted by the little yeast critters. Yeah. But I remember two in particular. There was a guy named Charlie Papazian, and he wrote a book called The Complete Joy of Homebrewing. And he had a recipe in it for a lemon and ginger mead that you could make either still or sparkling. And I made it sparkling. I didn't have mead yeast, so I used champagne yeast because that produces the highest alcohol content of what I had at the time.
Right.
And we called it Magna Carta mead because it was runny mead. That's where Magna Carta was signed, you see, in runny mead.
Right. Okay.
And I made another one that that I flavored with peaches and cloves. And it numbed and it numbed your mouth when you
drank
it.
Now the peaches would definitely pique my interest.
It was called
Mad Mood Mead.
Mad Mood Mead.
Yeah, because if you put it over ice cream, then you had Mad Mood Mead a la mode.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, how creative.
John and Bob, this is Chris. I made one with 20 pounds of honey, a big pile of nectarines, and then the champagne yeast, like was Bob was saying. And it turned out fantastic. It got better, like, 5 years.
The longer it sat, the better it got, as long as it did not explode.
Yeah, well, yeah, it doesn't blow up on you. Bob.
Yeah. I told him, because he just messaged me the picture of the new bottle, the new batch coming out, and I told him I wanted to get back to him with a friend of mine who I know would enjoy that.
Oh, yes.
And he's a great guy.
Others have heard the story. I'll go ahead and tell the abbreviated version of it, or as abbreviated as I can make. That lemon and ginger mead was my first mead, and it was back early in our marriage. You know, we just passed our 27th anniversary. We hadn't even gotten to our third anniversary when I made this mead. But because I have to be obsessive compulsive about everything and learn everything there is to possibly know about it, and so I found out the origin of the word honeymoon. And that was the tradition in the Middle Ages of the bride and groom's parents giving them enough mead to last them a month or a moon. So honey, mead is made of honey. And so a honeymoon is a month's worth of mead. And the reason you did that is because back then, when we were talking about landed estates and everything, estates passed through the firstborn male child. And the folk wisdom of the day said that mead, the bride and groom drinking mead, would make it more likely that a boy child would be born. Well, they did some research later on, and they found out that, in fact, the drinking of mead alters the uterine pH in the mother, which in turn makes it easier for the little Y chromosome guys to reach the egg because they like the slightly more acidic environment. And so it was probably about this time of year, really. I'd made it. It had been aging for about 16 weeks or so in the cellar. And I was leaving the office, and I called the Viking warrior Pharaoh Princess, and I said, "Don't do anything, baby. I'm going to cook dinner tonight. I'm going to stop and get some steak, some potatoes. We'll have some steak, potatoes, salad. I'll find something nice for dessert."
What a guy.
And she was like, "Okay, baby." She said, "Then it's a lovely day," because back then springs were lovely in West Virginia. And she said, "I'll put a six-pack of the mead in the freezer to get it extra good and cold, and we'll have cold mugs and everything, and we'll have mead with our dinner." I said, "That's a fantastic idea." And so she did, and I did my shopping. I came home. She got out my frozen mug, opened the mead, poured, and it was sparkling, so it had this beautiful crystal head on it, and she poured me the mug, and I drank it, because it was so good, and it was so cold and crisp and perfect. And I just knocked it back, and she drank hers, and I had forgotten, and I was being careful in my brewing. I knew what the alcohol content of this stuff was, but I wasn't paying attention. I was just drinking it like beer, and it was 15% alcohol. And so I knocked back two of those right quick. Yeah, I knocked back two of those right quick and kept on cooking. And next thing you know, I'm just wandering around behind my behind the little animals and, you know, grilling the steaks and stuff. And that was the night our only son was conceived.
Well, boy, how to shit. What a story. All because of your mead. Buddy.
Because the mead worked.
The mead worked. So you got a son. There you go. There you go. Well, I'm going to make sure.
If you got that hammered, it's lucky you still worked.
I had a fine beer today on my show. You know, Beer and Bud Friday is on my show every Friday. We crank out the beer and spark up the bud. But today I enjoyed a nice beer from Hawaii, from the Big Island.
Very nice.
Yes, they sent me two very large bottles of beer, and it was 5.6% alcohol. It's pretty stout.
Well, I have been of late sampling a little bit of I've been on a bit of a sake kick lately, and I'm just enjoying it because you know that garbage in the green bottle with the screw top, that Geikikan, is terrible, and that's why they serve it hot, because that's the only way you can cover up the toe jam tequila awfulness of it.
There's a
brand coming out of upstate New York now. It's made in Japan, shipped here, and it's a true, you know, polished rice, you know, fancy schmancy, beautiful bottle called Taiku, T-Y-K-U. And you serve that stuff as cold as you can get it, and it's 15%. And, you know, you drink it in little shots in your little sake cup, and it's wonderful.
Right.
It's wonderful. And I can't wait until, I can wait. I'm more than willing to wait until things reopen. But several weeks ago, Ralph's went off being the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, and she found a sake shop in San Francisco, which right before all of this started, I managed to get an order from.
And
I got one made with yuzu. I got one that was aged in a cedar cask, which was the most interesting thing I think I've ever tasted. And I got one that I'm still hanging on to that's a sparkling that I'm waiting till it's warm. And then Agnes and I are going to build a fire in the fire pit and open up our folding chairs and drink sparkling sake under the stars.
There you go, baby. Sounds plumb romantic, buddy.
I'm trying.
Did she really say baby when she said go ahead? That was sweet of you. She used the word baby?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure, I believe you. Sure, I believe you.
She liked me back then.
Yeah, that's like mine. I've had mine 43 years, baby. You ain't telling me nothing. Yeah.
I'm only 25, Uncle John. How are you, brother?
I'm doing fine. Steven, yourself?
Doing good, man. Just rolling with the punches, bro.
We're the charge down here in Texas, baby. I think they're passing a law down here that if you don't get your ass out there in public, I think they're going to give you a ticket or something.
Oh, yeah, it's getting crazy here. Nobody social distancing. I mean, it's just fucking nuts. And the county right next to me, Hall County, is blowing up. It was on the news last night. And the governor says, oh, it has nothing to do with the poultry factories. It has everything to do with the poultry factories.
Supreme Court judge up there. She said it's not the regular folk.
Yeah.
You know, it's those people that work in the meat plants that are spreading. It's not the regular
folks. John, her name will live in infamy. That was Supreme Court Justice Patience D. Roggensack.
Yes, ain't she just a patient?
You sit on the wrong toilet seat and things can go bad with your Roggensack.
Yeah, I got her quote right here, Bob. It says, she said, we're talking about the numbers in the county there. These were due to meat packers. That's where the Brown County got its flair. It wasn't the regular folks. Well, who the hell does she think works in the fucking meat packing plant?
Those aren't your nice white Wisconsin people. That's what those aren't.
Nah. Yeah, those are the people that feed your ass.
You know, those are people.
Those are the immigrants, the people who do the work that real Americans won't do.
Yeah. Those are people whose names end in vowels.
Yeah.
I used to think it was hyperbolic when Mike would say these people are death ghouls. He nailed it. They are fucking death ghouls.
Yeah.
It's a death cult. Yeah. Well, oh, and I got to send out some thank. I got to send out some thank you or a thank you. Thank you to Otto for jumping in. We're now down to $87 to go to finish off the Mother's Day challenge, kindly put forward by Larry in Liberalville. Thank you, Larry, and thank you, Otto, for jumping in. Louie got us started on the first $3 of that when he finished off Rico's challenge. And just a quick piece of news coming in from the Bay Area, since I mentioned San Francisco a minute ago. Dave number 11 sent this through. United States Penitentiary, Lompoc. Lompoc, famous to me at least, because if you've ever watched W.C. Fields' classic, The Bank Dick, the film tells you at the very beginning that it's set in Lompoc. Headline from the San Francisco Chronicle, 574 inmates test positive for coronavirus at Lompoc Federal Prison Complex, two dead.
That's known as one of the camps, the prison camps. It's the minimum security. That's kind of like Club Fed. And it's a very old building, from what I understand, having talked to a former client who served some time there. But it's right on the coast in Ventura County.
Brother Rick, I got a question for you.
Highway 101?
Yeah, exactly. It's off of Highway 101, I think. Yeah. It's you know, minimum security. So I'm surprised that the Rona is running wild there. You'd think that you'd have more in a maximum security. But again, whenever people are clustered together, you know, the Rona will go after you, you know?
It doesn't discriminate, Rick.
No, definitely not.
Rick, change gears just for a minute, if you don't mind. I want to pick that legal expert brain of yours. Does the judge have any recourse with this Flynn situation?
That's a good point that Bob had made, because
I know. I wanted your take on it as well.
You know, once a defendant enters a guilty plea, it can only be, you know, you can only get out of it with the judge's you know, if the judge grants the request to be relieved of the guilty plea. So I suppose the judge could appoint. Maybe he could appoint a prosecutor in lieu of the U.S. attorney, like a special prosecutor, to just handle the case. He might say, look, I'm not going to grant I'm not going to vacate the guilty plea. The guilty plea stands, and I'm going to set sentencing for such and such a date. And given that the U.S. Department of Justice has indicated they don't want to prosecute this person, I'm going to appoint, like a special master or, you know, some private attorney to be the prosecutor. He could possibly do that. I don't know exactly. This is kind of
untested. Do you have much faith in that?
What's happening?
I said, do you have a lot of faith in that happening?
No, I don't have any faith in anything.
Because this whole Flynn thing, like everything else, is just...
We'll get rat fucked.
They're trying to rewrite the whole Russian investigation story.
There's people that are Facebook friends who are saying, oh, you know, prosecute Schiff, he's a crook, and prosecute the FBI agents now, you know, as if Barr is somehow, you know, an above board guy. He's not, you know, he's just
Barr,
like
nothing but a lackey.
Oh, he's just there, a lackey. Yeah.
The end result, even if we went through all these wheels, is Trump could pardon him anyhow, correct?
Well, yeah, he probably would, but let's not make it easy by dismissing the charges.
Yeah, absolutely.
By anybody's measure out there. Anybody with half a brain out there, the man pleaded guilty twice.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
Does that mean next time the FBI talks to me, I can just lie through my freaking teeth and they're not, you know, I can just, well, that's okay because, you know.
I didn't mean it.
It's not important that I lie.
Well, it depends on a friend of Fox, you know?
Yeah.
That's not really the excuse that they're trying to sell. The excuse is, well, yeah, I lied. The record shows that I lied.
Yeah.
But I was only answering what they were asking me, because Barr's justification is they shouldn't have asked him that. They shouldn't have been asking those types of questions at that point. Isn't that pretty much the technicality?
I have no idea what Barr's explanation is. I'm sure it's bullshit, whatever it is.
Hey, Rick.
Uh-huh.
Rick, one of the MSNBC former U.S. attorneys was on with Rachel the other night.
Uh-huh. She
was saying that if there was some way somehow there was charges were dropped or whatever, a new attorney general could renew the charges or something.
Yeah, I suppose so, except for the fact that you have
double jeopardy
statutes limitation.
And double jeopardy.
Well, she was talking about that. She said there was like a 5-year statute of limitation.
Yeah, March 2022, I think, is what she said.
Well, maybe so.
You saw it too, Scott?
Yeah, I did.
Maybe so. Well, maybe Flynn will spend some time in jail after all. Who knows? But I mean, see, you know, the weird thing is, it's the court that accepts the guilty plea of the defendant. And in order to set a guilty plea aside, it's a very, it's not an easy thing to do. This, I guess, is a bit different because they're just dismissing the whole underlying, you know, case. So, you know, chances are, you know, he's not going to spend a day in jail again, unless there's a new attorney general down the road. When you have a normal administration, hopefully Democratic, certainly not Trump, they could renew charges.
So, I, y'all were talking about statutes of limitations, but coming from another angle, can the DOJ null pros this thing with prejudice?
Dismiss it with prejudice.
I mean, is that within the DOJ's purview? Can they tie the hands of a future DOJ that way?
Yeah, I suppose possibly so. If they dismiss it with prejudice, I mean, typically, you know, dismissal of an indictment or whatever on the government's motion is usually without prejudice. So I think if they don't specify anything, it's going to be considered to be without prejudice. They would have to affirmatively state it was with prejudice to be, you know, a dismissal with prejudice.
Yeah, I realize that it's presumptively without, but
right.
Is it jurisdictionally or?
Well, let me look at the rules of criminal procedure here.
By the way, Billable, you're getting some pushback from Lady B.
Oh. Okay.
Lady B said, "Jesus, Bob, I said I wasn't going to listen because when I listen, I want to write to you, and I don't need to be doing that right now." and then she says, "But I turned you back on in time to hear Billable Rick say the virus doesn't discriminate." Yes, it does, Rick. It absolutely does. And
well,
I know what she means by that. It discriminates against people who don't have adequate health care systems, who don't have adequate access to ongoing wellness care.
Right.
It discriminates against the elderly. It has discriminated the fuck out of the African American community, as Lady B explained the other night, not because African American, but because of all of those factors that pile up on the African American community.
Exactly.
Yeah, her point's very well taken. I saw the statistic that of all of the COVID deaths in Chicago, for example, 72% were African American, even though African Americans only make up like 30% of the population in Chicago.
It's 80%
feels
there, Rick.
Yeah, when you put it that way, it feels just a little bit genocidal, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly does.
We make up the least percent of the country's population. But then we're in the most percentage of people in jail, people with low wage paying jobs, people who, as you know, are dying of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just so fucking lucky. God, I love being black in this country, and a lesbian and a woman. God, it's just a
people that get shot by Trump's
freaking lottery, Tracy.
I just hit the motherfucking lottery. I tell you.
So how many days? How many days did it take to get those guys arrested? Was something like 75 days? Those two idiots in Georgia.
Well, the shooting took place February 23rd, but there was no formal request for an investigation until after the video leaked on May the 5th. So that's 9 minus 3 is 6, 31 and 6 is 38, 30 and 38, 68, 73 days.
So the crime was never initially reported. There were no other witnesses besides the person had the camera or the phone.
Yeah.
The father and son team had declared that there was a rash of robberies in their neighborhood. There was robberies all over the place, so they was stopping the suspicious guy. And come to find out that the Glenn County Police have one report of a 9mm pistol being stolen from an unlocked vehicle on January 1st is the only report of a crime in that area. And guess whose truck it was stolen out of?
Gee, I wonder.
Gregory McMichael, the fucking father who taught his little cockroach son that the best thing to do is to grab a gun and let's go out in the street, baby. I have said it from the day one I started my show. We will never get rid of racism and cockroaches because there's always going to be some cockroach out there teaching his little cockroach ways. And that's exactly what this is.
Well, I got another one for you. This could have ended every bit as badly. It comes out of North Carolina. It's days ago. High school senior mother say large group of armed people, including off-duty deputy, terrorized them in their home. It's out of Pender County, North Carolina. And a lawyer for the family has sent a letter to both the New Hanover and Pender County District Attorney, a guy named Ben David. Well, the lawyer, James Lee, describes a scenario in which a gang of people with guns, a gang of white people with guns banged on the door of the home of Monica Shepherd late this past Sunday night. She was asleep, but her son Damien, a high school senior, was up playing video games. There was even a sign in the yard that said, "Congratulations, graduating senior Damien," that all the seniors had in their yards because they don't get to go to fucking graduation because Donald Trump ignored a goddamn plague. So the knock comes on the door. Damien answers it. And what is, this is the origin of, this is a lynch mob, okay? And they tell him that they're looking for a young missing girl. And they're looking for an individual named Josiah, who lived next door to these folks. But he had, he'd left the neighborhood at least a month before. So the young man says, "Well, I'm not him. My name's Damien. See, my name's on the sign in the yard." And they kept on at him to give him information about Josiah. Well, one of the people on the porch was an off-duty sheriff's deputy carrying a goddamned assault rifle. Deputy J.T. Keita. Who works in the detention division. I guess that means he's a guard. And when Damien tried to shut the door, that asshole stuck his foot in the door jamb and wouldn't let him close the door. And that's about when Mama wakes up and goes and tells him to get the hell off of her property. And that kid doesn't live there. And they kept on pressing and they kept on questioning. And the guy said, he said, "I'm going to step inside, close the door, and talk to you guys." And Mama said, "No, you're not." He had his foot on the threshold of my door, holding the door open, and he said it again. He said, "I'm going to step inside and close the door, and I'll talk to you." And I said, no, you're not. And in the meantime, they've called 911. Two deputies finally show up to talk with the victims. And the potential lynch mob follows the deputies onto the property. The deputies took no names. They didn't investigate at all. A captain shows up and doesn't do dick. And then the captain comes back the next day and says, well, you know, it'd be very complicated to arrest anybody in this. But, yeah. You know, we'll look into it. And so now with the plague on, people are feeling, I guess, empowered, certain people. Now, here's an interesting comparison. A little over a year ago, this took place in West Virginia. A bunch of assholes, including a mayor and a chief of police of a little town in West Virginia, six or seven people, all on one fucking four-wheeler, you know, white people. They wanted to harass a dude into selling them on the cheap some adjoining land that he owned that was next to one of the people on the four-wheeler's property. And they showed up with guns at his house. And he's an older guy. He's retired. And when they started fucking with him, they didn't know that he was not just retired, but he was a retired Marine. And a retired Marine who was also retired from the Border Patrol. And not just retired from the Border Patrol, but retired from the TSA. And they came up and menaced, him. And he walked out with a semi-automatic, with some kind of firearm, shot the fuck out of him, paralyzed one of the assholes, killed another one, and sent him fleeing. And later on, when the prosecuting attorney gets hold of it, he looks at the cops and stuff. I'm not taking this guy to the grand jury. You guys fucking earned that. You show up on a human being's front door with guns. If you're met with guns, you got that coming. Dude was white. I don't think these folks could answer the door that way.
No.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, they could, but they'd be dead.
Bob, I got a scenario I want to run by you.
All right.
You might know about, seeing as how you've been there. Not this weekend, but next weekend, NASCAR is going to start have a race at Darlington.
Oh, wow.
With no spectators. Do you think there'd be any kind of people showing up wanting to see the race, being bitchy and
demanding their constitutional right.
No right to go see a NASCAR race.
I get to watch the if you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing. It's in the Constitution right there next to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Look it up.
MAGA motherfucker. MAGA.
So what do you think of Ron DeSantis's WWE as an essential service? I mean, when that came on the news, I thought that was totally ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's on my ass. Hey, I think I have an answer to the question that was posed earlier about Michael Flynn. Rule 48, subsection A of the Rules of Criminal Procedure, Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, state as follows: the government may, with leave of court, dismiss an indictment, information, or complaint. The government may not dismiss the prosecution during trial without the defendant's consent. So the government has to get leave of court to dismiss this indictment.
So Emmett Sullivan can tell the AG to piss up a rope.
Absolutely. He can tell him to piss up a rope. I'm not dismissing the case.
He could even go so far as to say, I'm issuing a summons right here, right now, for the Right Honorable William Pepe the Frog Barr, Attorney General of the United States, to appear forthwith before me, and I'm sending the U.S. Marshals to make sure that he gets here quickly and safely.
Yeah, done in the form of an order to show cause why sanctions should not be imposed, or why the case should not.
Hold on. This is so egregious and so legally sketchy. He could also issue a capias or a summons. Maybe not a capias, but certainly a summons.
Because
by virtue of his action, Barr has made himself a witness in a potential political corruption case.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Judges aren't that activistic usually. You know, they don't want to like start a proceeding.
Yeah, they don't. But this normally they don't, Billable. But this ain't normal.
No, it's not.
Because what we're setting up here is a confrontation between a political appointee and a federal judge clothed in all the majesty of Article 3.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, for purposes of clarification, because somebody was pointing out that in the wake of Watergate, during Watergate, you had two attorneys general who got caught up in to one degree or another in the scandal. And in the wake of that, the Justice Department began to clean up its own act in terms of procedures and practices, but it was never codified in the law that this is how the behavior should be, which left a big loophole for Barr to exploit, okay? The pretzel, the human lawyer pretzel that he had to twist his big self into to even come up with this scam is amazing. The guy shouldn't be attorney general. He ought to be in the big people circus.
Well, have you heard his soundbite talking about his legacy?
And yeah, it all depends on who writes the history.
Exactly. And talk about arrogance. That's totally arrogant. I can't stand the guy.
But the thing is, administration.
It
all depends on who writes the history. It's one cubic Trump of hubris away from. Who cares about history? We're all going to be dead. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that guy.
Yeah. Oh, man. You got a great voice. Yeah. The great voice there.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
You realize everything that we... Go ahead.
Hey, John. One second. I think we're missing one big, giant piece here, the Flynn situation, and it's little baby maggot Flynn. Does anyone remember why?
Oh, yeah, little shitbird Flynn.
Yeah. Exactly. Wasn't he one of the comet ping pong pizza comet fuckers?
He promoted that. Yeah, he was promoting that shit. Yeah.
And wasn't part of Flynn's agreement to plead guilty that they wouldn't touch the little maggot Flynn? Yeah.
Yeah, that was a concern. I know. I don't know if it was explicitly stated as part of the plea agreement that he wouldn't prosecute the son.
And how many years have gone by, and are we past the statute of limitations where we can go after little baby maggot Flynn?
You probably go after baby maggot Flynn still, but probably not for much longer.
Yeah,
a 5-year statute for that one.
It passed as prologue. We're not. All this is going to continue until November 3rd, and all the way up until January.
Yeah.
When Joe Biden is sworn in, it's going to be a continual shit show. Ever since he got here, it's going to be a shit show until he leaves the door.
Yeah.
I hope to have faith in my government, in the Department of Justice, after this shit show leaves, and they can start investigating this. But until he's gone, until we have all these little lackeys of his out of our system, we're not going to get shit.
Well, Uncle John, aren't you terrified about what he's going to do if, during the lame duck period?
Yes, I am.
It's going to be a wild fucking woods,
man. I am, because the people that he's already talking, it's the same maggots with these protests to open my government and all this shit.
Exactly.
These are the same maggots he talks to all the time, and those are the ones that he is going to try to incite to do something. Now, it's not. It would not be on a major size, and I think it would be put down rather quickly. But he is going to try that because that's the kind of dick he is. He is not about to walk out of that door humbled by a defeat in the election. No, that's not Donnie. Donnie's going to whine, bitch, moan, groan, lie, and do everything he's done since the day he got here. Ain't nothing going to change.
And well, talk about how unfair everything is.
Yes. How rigged it is. Billions and billions of illegal voters, dead men are voting. They go outside, they change glasses and come back in. It's going to be the whole fucking shit show.
Yes. All those brown people, how dare they? How dare they go vote?
How dare they go vote?
Well, let's just...
By the way, I trust y'all did see the story where they are set up to spend, the GOP is set up to spend some $20 million just on, I think, lawyers alone to engage in voter suppression in advance of the election.
It's the only shot they got.
Yeah.
You know, we... Boy, Bob, you know, it's I'm like you, you know, 6 days a week I do my show. It pumped the gas the whole time to try to get that message out. You know, this is it. November 3rd. Well, I don't give a fuck what you hear on the news or whatever else. You got one shot to kill to save this country. That's it, baby.
Well, my biggest concern right now is what's going on with the postal USPS. They got a new guy running that, and he apparently is anti-United States Postal Service.
It's the same thing we saw with the EPA. They're going to put somebody in there that this. Now, I'm glad you said the post office because, Bob, we on the Blue Dot show, we have started this thing of it's a twofold make you feel good and do a good deed. We're asking all our Blue Dot family members to go to the post office and buy 10 postage paid postcards. A pack of 10 is about $3.70.
Yeah.
If you can only afford a couple of them, just buy a couple of them. Mail them to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to POTUS. And just on the back of it, just write, "You're fired," or whatever message you'd like to. But send it in a postcard. You're doing two things. You're getting that little, now, will he see it? Probably not. I don't give a shit if he sees it or not. Somebody's going to see it and go, "Wow, sure is getting a lot of postcards." Just write on the back, "You're fired," or whatever. But buying a postage from the post office helps the post office. I don't know about y'all. My postman still comes every freaking day. As a matter of fact, I'm lucky. I got a good guy that calls me or not calls me. He messaged me in the morning, tells me if there's mail in my box down there to save me a 25-mile trip to go check. Hell of a good guy. And every one of us get mail every day. And there's no doubt that Donnie is trying to hurt the postal service as much as he can. They've been hit by this coronavirus like anybody else. So we're asking you to go buy a few postcards from them and support your post office and mail that postcard to Donnie the Dictator and tell him what you think. You know, it's a two.
If I could go another step further, John, I think that's a fantastic idea. I love the idea of supporting the postal service.
Yes, sir.
You know what? Maybe I think there's some emotional value in writing "You're fired" and sending it to the fuckwit.
Yeah, that's what that is. He going to see it? No.
But no. Is it possible there might be greater functional value? Instead of addressing it to him, maybe find the address for Pence.
Oh, Mike Pence?
Yeah.
Oh, you got buy 10, send 5 to each.
Right. And on the back of that one, write 25th Amendment now.
Now. Because those are the only people that can. And they're failing to do what is obviously needed to be done for a long time. Like I said,
don't forget to send one to Moscow Mitch, too.
Yeah, send them all. Any postcard, any postage that you're sending through the post office helps the post office. Their revenue source is down, so it's a way to, you know, just boost them, support them, and send it to Mitch. Send it to Mike Pence. Send it to all of them. Send it to Lindsey Graham. You know,
the other advantage of sending a postcard is it doesn't have to go through the anthrax explosives check. that can take 4 to 6 weeks. The postcard just goes right straight through without the extra handling.
And as a little side benefit, everybody that card gets in front of is going to see it. You know?
Oh, wow. Tim did your research. He posted in the chat how to contact Mike Pence.
There you go.
One Observatory, yeah. Circle U.S., Naval Observatory, you know, Washington, D.C.
We can't give up on attempting to do as much as we can when we can. I always say on the show that every fight that we're in right now is really a generational fight. Nothing that we do now is going to fix everything. But it took 230-some-odd years or wherever the hell we are to get where we're at now. And now we've turned a corner and going backwards a bit? No. We have to step up, baby. We
need Uncle to take John, control his name is Louis DeJoy, and he has contributed $2.2 trillion to Trump's campaign. Trillion with a T.
Wait, hold on. That's got to be a misprint.
No, that can't.
There's no trillionaires in the world.
No.
Let me see.
Yeah, he's maybe billions.
Unless he's stealing money. No.
Billions.
There isn't that much.
Let me see. Well, maybe I read it wrong. I apologize. All right.
No, it's Mnuchin has got $2 trillion.
Spend it in the United States, right?
Yeah. Steve Mnuchin got all the money right now.
He's got all the money. That guy
I am about tired of this. This is the biggest transfer of wealth.
Mnuchin's the worst example. Excuse me. Mnuchin's the worst example of predatory capitalism.
Exactly.
Just read about him, how he's foreclosed on people, how he's gone after people, reneging on a lease. He went after a woman. He would not let up. The guy is just nasty.
He is. And as I always like to throw in, so is his wife.
Oh, I love this. This is great. Hold on. This is beautiful. This is beautiful. Darlene in Connecticut just wrote in, Pence won't do it. He won't enact the 25th. He's too much of a coward. But Mother Pence might, LOL.
Karen?
Yeah, Karen would like to see the manager.
No, I love Karen's explanation of why Mike didn't wear a mask that day. I mean, come on, man. These people, they can't even cover their own asses. It's amazing.
And meanwhile, as David...
I only have one word David, to say. Just go one ahead, Bob.
As David in South Carolina stand just reminded us, old Balls and Strikes Roberts has entered a stay to the order requiring the Maggot administration to turn over the Mueller documents. Well, how's about that? Doesn't that just beat cats fucking? Big thanks to Will in Chicago, who has jumped in on finishing off the Mother's Day challenge. That takes us down to 87. Mm-hmm. We got $62 to finish Larry in Liberalville's Mother's Day challenge. Thank you very kindly, Will. That's really, really helpful. I would like to, one other thing, the latest fad in the Confederacy and other maggot states is to just stop counting the old people. So David in South Carolina, Stan, let us know that nursing home and military and jails and prisons are no longer going to be counted in official daily tolls, I take it, in South Carolina, Stan. Course, we've got the same thing going on. They won't disclose in Texas. And you've actually, you know, we had had that tape of Jacob Wohl and Jack Berkman talking to a recording, talking to the woman that they paid to say that Anthony Fauci raped her. And they said, look, you got to clean out the barn every now and then. 400,000 dead's nothing. There's 200,000 people who are old and going to die anyway, and 200,000 of the lowest, most worthless people in America. They are. This is the 75th anniversary of the surrender of Nazi Germany. And on the 75th anniversary of the surrender of Nazi Germany, we're finding out that they may have surrendered, but they retooled, and they're fucking back. Untermenschen. Untermenschen. I'm sorry. I don't mean to shut you down, Otto. And thank you for jumping in too, my friend. But we've got, you know, I mentioned at the top of the program that we lost a very dear friend. Turns out April 27th, but we only found out about it today, and I only found out about it because of our buddy Tim in L.A. talking about Bob Lottie. And Tim's in the group this evening, and I just wanted to give Tim an opportunity because he and Bob were really, really, really close. And I just wanted to give Tim an opportunity to offer up any kind of words or valedictory or whatever, you know, whatever might be on your heart, Tim.
Yeah, I'm going to miss it, dude, because, he got me into Unitarian Universalism because we used to chat all day long, all night long about atheism and, you know, goofing on Christians and whatnot. But then he told me about the UUs and I basically changed my ideas because of him. And also, I guess growing up, I wasn't really into science, but he made it fun. And I learned a lot from him, especially with the coronavirus, about what's going on, what it is, and how, you know, the same COVID virus or coronavirus is basically like the common cold, but it's even more powerful than the flu. And his knowledge was, wow, it was really powerful. And I enjoyed speaking with him. We would talk to about shit late at night. We'll just talk, and sometimes he'll be up to about 4 in the morning his time, and I'm going to miss the guy.
One of the founding members of the Horn Malloy's chat group.
Yeah. I knew he had his issues. What got him, do you know, Tim? I'm sorry to hear about that. Jeez, it was like just two or three weeks ago, we did like an after Friday. He stayed on after the front porch. We chatted for like another couple hours.
He wasn't feeling good then.
Yeah, I could tell. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, his sister
did it as a favor to me.
Was it a heart issue he had, or do you know? Or?
Well, he did have heart issues, but he said it's probably his sister-in-law said it's probably a heart attack or stroke.
Oh gosh!
But he said it was quick.
Some cardiovascular issues.
In fact,
on that Friday on the front porch a few weeks back, he even referenced the fact that he thought maybe the fact that he was on a particular blood thinner might have protected him against the Rona a little bit.
Yeah, and they're actually that's actually thought to be one of the new treatments for people who are, you know, who are infected, to give them blood thinners. They're trying to figure out which blood thinner is the most effective for that, you know, because one of the problems they're noticing with the Rona is, you know, blood clots can form anywhere in the body, and they can, you know, travel up to the lungs, they can go to the heart.
Yeah, they can form anywhere, and then they get busy.
Yeah.
And they become an embolism, they plug things up too.
I
have wonderful and fond memories of Lottie. I remember, this is just one of those things. When Ferg was considerably younger than he is, you know, we have rules around here. Apparently they exist to be broken. but I'd said, you know, Ferg, you know, leave the production computer alone. Just don't. So naturally, it's like, you know, God saying, hey, don't eat out of that tree. And so he came in here, and it was that time in a young man's life when his generation decides to go looking for porn. And he managed to pick up some ungodly, horrible, vicious thing that went all the way to the root of C. And Lottie and I sat here, and, you know, just with a phone and him, you know, what do you see, Bob, with that lovely, lovely, lovely Boston accent? What do you see, Bob? I can't even do the accent. And I'm telling him, he's like, well, this is a delicate operation. You don't want to screw around when you're down in the root of C. I said, no, the screwing around's already been done. And he ever so patiently walked me through going down into the root of C, going way down the tree, and finding that nasty little piece of shit that had attached itself to the computer, We cleaned it out. We got it taken care of. The computer came back to life, and I went in and gave Ferg a stern talking to. Years later, it was 2012. We were doing an action related to mountaintop removal, and for the first and only time in my life, I got to go up to Boston. And Lottie was insistent that he chauffeur me around town and just show me the sights. He took me to Revere Beach. And then we went out to a local place. It's a chain, but it's local, and it's called Kelly's. And the two things that they're famous for are their razor-thin sliced top round beef sandwiches. That was not what we were there for. We were there for the Ipswich clams. The whole clam with the belly on. Battered and deep fried. And we went wild on them. And God almighty, they were delicious. And I think what I did that night, I think I poisoned my gallbladder. Because I went back to the hotel room and spent the night before I had the speaking engagement the next day at Harvard. Spent the night alternately heaving into the toilet and then jumping up and sitting on it. Because nothing was going right anywhere within my entire digestive tract. And I gave the Eastern Daylight Time Zone a dinner break earlier. I didn't fuck it up until 5:50 p.m. And now here in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone, I've given you an hour. If you haven't eaten by now, too late, because now, you know, I just fucked dinner in the Pacific Time Zone.
Thanks, Bob.
Oh, yeah, it's only
because I'm having dinner on the beach.
You didn't even get to me one bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's because you're a tough, grizzled Vietnam veteran who ate weird things in Asia. Just like John Britovo. Yeah. John Britovo's like, I've had a balloon, man. Fuck you.
No,
I remember Lottie with such fondness. And I get a notification because, you know, you're one of the people I follow on Facebook, and it says, you know, Tim from LA just posted, and I said, oh, let's see what Tim's up to. Oh, no. And that's all I could think was just to type the word, all caps. No. But yeah.
Bob, before Bob signs off, I need to make an apology. I blurted out Trey, and it's $1.2 million that the Joy made. I had Trump and million got crisscrossed in my brain. I haven't had much sleep, and I want to just apologize.
Million, trillion, you know. Yeah. You pretty soon you're talking real money.
I don't want to spread information. I apologize to the Horn family.
Hey, so Tim, in honor of Lottie, and in honor of the fact that I found it out from you, I asked Agnes to go out to the cooler and bring me in a little bottle of ice cold sake, and I have a shot here. It is, and I'm so proud of myself. I'm working on my pronunciation and stuff, Tim. It is a Junmai Ginjo, and that means it's halfway decent sake. So I'm hoisting it in Lottie's memory with love and gratitude and undying friendship. And the same to you, Tim, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Kanpai.
Don't let Tim say he doesn't know how to speak Japanese.
Oh, no. One of these days, Tim, I'm still going to, because I've been deciding for a long, long time. You know, I don't have so much as the only thing that even passes remotely for a tattoo on me is where I accidentally stabbed myself in the calf with a pencil lead in fourth grade, and there's a little blue dot on my leg. And
so that's what
that's the only life scar you have.
No, it's not the only life scar. It's the only thing resembling a tattoo. It's the same principle.
Scars are, I call them life scars. I won't get a tattoo.
Well, I'm still.
Hey, Bob, you're a blue dot.
I've got a blue dot on my leg. Yes, Joey. Well played. you're paying attention. You're paying attention. But no, there's a Bourdain episode, Tim, where and it's I think one of his last Japanese episodes, where he goes and hangs out in a rainy, cold mountain cabin with some serious hardcore cooking the hearth in the middle of the floor guys. Brilliant people. And one of the guys tells him a phrase in Japanese that just crawled all over me. And I'm sure I'll mangle it, but it's like, ichio ichie. And the way Bourdain explained it was, it means...
What'd you call me?
Earlier I told you to blow me for your 80 degrees. That's what I did, John. But apparently that phrase means this moment now, never to come again. And it's a reminder to sort of be here now. And so I thought about maybe letting that be the tattoo that I get and get it somewhere that I can see it to remind me. And I'm going to run it past you because I don't want to run it through Google Translate or anything, because I don't want to wind up getting Eat It Joe's or This Side Up or Let's Never Ever Anybody Tell This Guy What This Really Is. He thinks it's a pirate ship in Japanese, in kanji on my body.
Oh, Lord. So you want me to write it down the kanji version then?
Well, I mean, what would be more elegant?
I guess kanji would be cool. Ichio ichie. I'll ask my ma.
Yeah, because you're...
That's his go-to person whenever.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I have long worshipped at the shrine of Tim's ma.
He's just my ma.
You got to watch out for those tattoo artists with whimsy and their heart and their little vibrating. Tattoo
precisely. That's why I said what I said. And by the way, Scott, that was a ripoff of an old George Carlin bit. He said, he said something like, I want to bribe a tattoo artist.
But a lot of women.
And he said, I want to bribe a tattoo artist to write on somebody's back, let's never ever anybody tell this guy what's on his back. He thinks it's a pirate ship.
Or sometimes the women on their lower back, right above their butt,
tramp
would
stamp.
Have what they thought was a meaningful Asian phrase, and invariably they would go to the tattoo guy who would put, you know, broccoli chicken teriyaki, you know, on their lower back. And then over time, as the body changes, it stretches out. It's like 3D lettering on one of those old George Powell movies.
Right. It starts out a butterfly, and over time it becomes a hulking vulture.
Yeah.
John Ritterbro can tell you about old tattoos.
I got a few. And I was just mentioning the other day that the one that's on my right forearm is the tattoo that you get when you're drunk ass, when you're 16 years old, got the world by the tail, baby, and you walk in and that's all the money you've got. You got a few bucks here. Which tattoo can I get? So I got a tattoo.
Is it Richard Nixon, John?
It's worse, baby. Oh, it's stupid. It's an owl that sits on a limb and underneath it says, who, me? That's it, baby. That's a stupid ass tattoo.
That's totally lame.
It is, but thank goodness over time it is now just a big black spot. What is that? It's a naked lady.
I advised my son against getting tattoos, but he got his first one the last time he went out to California.
Was a shock.
At least the artist didn't misspell the Latin. You know, you take your wins where you can get them. But he comes back, and this was back when he was deciding to be a professional alcoholic. And he and a buddy went out one night, and they both decided to get kemosabe. I mean, it's not like I'd never taught him about cultural appropriation or anything like that, but they both got kemosabe on their forearms, okay? On kind of the inside, you know, on the inside of their forearms, where it's nice and obvious. But they got it done in the kind, because, you know, it was one of the, it's West Virginia, and it's one of those tattoo artists. They get it done in this gothic German script that, you know, the very use of that script makes it look Nazi. And the thing is, at first glance, you don't see kemosabe. It looks like lemonade.
Oh. Gotta look close, baby. I advise people, in one story I told, a football player played for Dallas Cowboys. His brother worked in my office, and he wanted to get a tattoo. And he was into music, and so he was really, he came to me and asked me, well, what, and over the years I have learned, if you're going to get one, do a little thought, do a little proper planning, and get something that you're going to be proud of. Don't stumble in drunk and say, pick something off the wall. It never works out. What it ended up doing is I told him to look for his favorite music of all time. Get the sheet music and have that done. And he ended up going to get the song music, the sheet music, for a song that his mother sang to him when he was a child. And he had that tattooed around his arm. And that, you know.
Who's typing?
That's Billable Rick. He's making money. Shh, be quiet.
Oh, it's not me. Not that time.
You this time?
Not that time.
I thought it was you.
Sorry to interrupt.
But no, getting a tattoo is something that you should really think about, what you want, because it's going to be there forever.
I've been thinking about it since the first photograph I ever saw of any of one of my dad's Navy buddies.
Yeah.
It was risque. It was shot, you know, down below on the Essex in, you know, 1944.
Right.
And this, there was very little of this old salt that was not tattooed. And what my dad made sure of getting a photograph of were the pair of horseshoes on his ass. Like he'd been kicked by a mule.
Kicked in the ass, baby. Kick it in the ass. Let's go. Yeah.
I mean, you know, one tattoo that has stood the test of time is the tattoo of Richard Nixon on the back of Roger Stone.
Roger Stone, yeah, that's a funny one. That lives in history. That's a tattoo that'll live in history.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And bosun's mate in the Coast Guard that had a fly tattooed on the side of his penis.
Yeah, I told people the other day, I ain't doing it. Those things hurt. I ain't whipping out my pecker for nobody. Go stick.
Well,
you know the story.
You know about the story of the newlyweds who took their honeymoon. This is the second reference to a honeymoon in this program this evening. You know the story about the
romantic devil. You
the story about the newlyweds who took their honeymoon in Jamaica. They went to one of those resorts and whatever, and they went to a nudist resort. And the new groom leaves his lovely bride sunbathing nude on the beach, and he walks up to the beach bar. You know how it is, the straw and the, you know, tiki and all the kitsch. And there's a Jamaican fella standing there ordering a drink, and the newlywed's standing there, and he just kind of glances over and says, "Huh, that's curious." And he reaches down and grabs his junk and pulls it out and says, "We just got married, and I had my new wife's name tattooed on my Johnson. See? Wendy. And there it says Wendy on yours, too." And the guy looks at him and goes, "Oh, no, man. This one says, 'Welcome to Jamaica. Have a nice day.'"
That water's deep, too.
Cold.
Hey, can I go back to Ms. Mnuchin for 1 second, Bob?
No, wait a minute. You just blew right past one of the great, great punchlines of all time. Water's cold. Deep, too.
Deep, too.
But, honey, this one's eating my popcorn.
So I got one word to describe Ms. Mnuchin. Gold digger.
Yeah, easy. That's sexist. Easy. I'm going to get emails about the sexism of that one. Quit it. You don't know what you guys do to me. Yeah. You know, we're getting perilously close to that point where we approach the other old chestnut joke that is equally funny about the old folks sitting on the porch of the old folks' home. It's because it's not funny if you say nursing home. It's an old folks' home. It's got a porch. It's got a veranda. Goddammit.
It sounds nice.
And the old guys are sitting there on the rocking chairs on the porch, and the new guy shows up, and he notices that every now and then one of them will go 17, and everybody on the porch just breaks up laughing. And a little bit later, somebody says 92. Oh, Jesus, they're grabbing their bellies, they're slapping their legs, fit to be tied. And after a little bit more of this, the new guy says, so what's this? You say a number and everybody laughs. He goes, yeah, we've all been here so long and we're so old. Instead of having to tell the same jokes over and over again, we just numbered them. And he goes, okay, let me try. They go, all right. He goes, 61. And everybody just looks at him. Nothing. Stone-faced. He goes, what's wrong? They look at him. You told it wrong.
You told it wrong. You forgot
the punchline. Bob, do you ever get the feeling that we, before it's over, we may both be headed for that porch calling out numbers? I can't remember jokes anymore. That's my trouble. If I could,
I can't do it on demand, but they just burble to the surface when they're needed.
And there's nothing better than an old joke. Some of them.
Well, one reason I miss my dad, he used to be able to bring up old jokes.
Oh, God, that video, Sparky, of him telling that one, that just slayed me.
Oh, I forgot about that.
If you want to read a good book about the technique of the joke, read Freud's book, Der Witz und seine Beziehung zu Unbewussten, The Joke and Its Relationship to the Unconscious.
No, it's fabulous. Not taking advice on joke telling from anybody who speaks German. There was an old I think it was a St. Pauli girl ad on TV probably 20 plus years ago, but I told it to some German friends of mine and they absolutely broke up. And it was a brilliant commercial, and it had a German stand-up comedian standing at the microphone, and he says, good evening, ladies and germs. I just flew in from Berlin, and boy, are my arms tired from the flapping.
From the flapping.
And the room is, of course, just dead. And the announcer voice comes on and says, Germans really aren't that good at funny. But we're really good at brewing beer. St. Pauli girl.
Beer.
Yeah.
Beer.
But so that's another one of those little things that's just entered, you know, the personal lexicon. That's what makes it funny. I just flew in from Berlin, and boy, are my arms tired. And that's, you know, that's just a cheap old vaudeville. You know. Yeah. But then, because he's German, he has to explain. From the flapping.
From flapping.
Yeah, he's got to be analytical.
So I'll be leaving Freud, you know, to you.
Well, anyway, but some of the jokes.
Well, read the title again. I got to hear that title. Love it when you speak German. Read that title again.
Here's the title. Dieses Buches ist Der Witz und seine Beziehung zum Unbewussten. Ich habe diese Fähigkeit, Deutsch zu sprechen. Ich liebe die deutsche Sprache.
See, this is why Mark Twain wrote the awful German language.
No, German, but let me just tell you, the reason why I study German is because as I get older, you get more senile. So you want to study a foreign language, study crossword puzzles, English.
I get that.
I speak French, too.
But I get that, but Twain, in the awful German language, complained about the verb coming at the end And he said that he said that when the Germans start a war, that it's complete confusion, because if they want to shoot at somebody, the word fire only comes at the fucking end, and everybody's just standing around waiting.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But the best line of his in that whole piece, and there are many, is when he said, I ran into an old associate of mine from California the other day, and he's in Germany, who looked at me and said, Mr. Twain, I would rather decline two drinks than one German adjective. That's a language joke for
inflection. It's a good language joke.
God, we gotta get out of here. That's nice. In the chat room, Natural says, I remember the picture of Bob with Bob Lottie. Yeah, that was the thing. I did survive the night of the living clams, and we got what was done, and then Bob generously, kindly took me to see the one thing I wanted to see more than anything else in Boston, and that was the USS Constitution.
I have that picture.
Which you was not somewhere, but not at hand. Which was closed for repairs because I'm me. Couldn't go aboard, but we could stand and look at it. And we, you know, we just had a lovely time, and you know, let his as folks like my friend Will from Chicago would say, let his memory be, may his memory be for a blessing. So thanks everybody for a wonderful evening. We're going to wrap up with just a tiny bit of Larry and Liberalville's Mother's Day challenge remaining. It would be great if that got knocked out. Thank you, Larry. And thank you to everybody who's responded. God, I said it a few minutes ago. Did anybody hear me? Because now I got to do the ciphering over again.
Did you say 87, something like that?
No, 62. 62. Yeah, there's 62.
Is this Sunday Mother's Day?
Yes.
Oh, fuck, I've got to set the DVR for...
Because last Saturday was Derby Day.
Bob, make it 42. I'll go 20. Let's bring this thing down, man.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks a ton.
I've got to set the DVR over to TBS this weekend for the 24-hour Mommy Dearest Marathon, then, if this is Mother's Day weekend. Never mind.
Hey, Bob. I just posted the album Bob in Boston on the Skype.
It's true. That's 20 trillion.
What's the balance?
Christ,
now?
I'm never going to live that one down.
came up with a 404 error.
42.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, it did the same to me. Yeah, 42.
Just surrounding there, Steve. Just surrounding there.
Yo.
42.
God, you're killing
the answer to life, the universe, and everything. 42.
Thank you. So, Mama just found out that she's getting some money on Tuesday. So, guess what?
Oh.
I got your... Oh, snap, bitch. Yes. So, 42 is... I got you.
All right. Thank you, Tracy. Then Larry from Liberalville's challenge is met. That's wonderful. That is tremendous. And as quick as I sign off, I'm going to go online and pay another bill that'll make sure this program stays on the air. Thank you all so very kindly. It's been an all over the place Friday on the front porch. And in a good way. Like I said a while back, it seems like this moment is the moment that this network was born for. And I thank you all for sharing your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you to all of you who help keep the program on the air and the community going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky for moderating for all these many years the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia.
Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Y'all stay safe. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Remain socially distant. Wear a mask to show respect to your community. And if you see any maggots, get away from them as fast as you can. Avoid them as though they are the plague. Because in this instance, they are. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend.